Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
We got a developing situation brewing between two of the biggest names in basketball, LeBron James and Phil Jackson. Here was LeBron just this morning after shoot-around.
I had nothing but respect for him as a coach, for what he was able to do. Obviously, at the helm of one of my favorite players of all time, MJ, and also been there growing up and watching with the Lakers. But I got nothing for him.
I've got nothing for him. He said more, and we're going to play that for you, but let's give you the background first. Yesterday, ESPN.com published an interview with Phil. It touched on a lot of topics, but here's how Phil answered a question about Pat Riley and LeBron leaving the Heat. Quote, when LeBron was playing with the Heat, they went to Cleveland, and he wanted to spend the night. They don't do overnights. Teams just don't. So now Spoelstra has to text Riley and say, what do I do in this situation? And Pat, who has iron fist rules, answered, you are on the plane. You are with this team. You can't hold up the whole team. I'm going to slow down here so you can get this. Because you and your mom and your posse want to spend an extra night in Cleveland. Phil goes on. I always thought Pat had this really nice vibe with his guys, but something happened there where it broke down. I do know LeBron likes special treatment, he says. He needs things his own way. Now, it's important to give a little context here.
Context.
We believe the incident Phil Jackson is referring to is when LeBron wanted to stay overnight so the next day he could host the entire team for Thanksgiving dinner at his house in Akron.
Monster.
Otherwise, they would have had to have Thanksgiving in a hotel conference room in Toronto. So not exactly selfish behavior there. Of course, it's not clear if Phil knew that. But anyway, last night, LeBron's close friend and longtime business partner, Maverick Carter, tweeted this, quote, after the hard work, effort, and achievement, and Phil Jackson still calls us a posse. Every step you take, they remind you, you ghetto. Carter later tweeted he wasn't calling Phil a racist, just calling out his, quote, disrespectful language. And he later elaborated to ESPN's Dave McMenamin, quote, it's the word posse and the characterization that I take offense to. If he would have said LeBron and his agent, LeBron and his business partners, LeBron and his friends, that's one thing. Yet because you're young and black, he can use that word. We're grown men. Again, some context. Two of LeBron's closest friends, the men you often see around him in important moments, are Maverick Carter, who at 34 years old helms several successful media companies, and Rich Paul, an agent who manages players and contracts worth many hundreds of millions of dollars. And here's a little context on the other side. Phil Jackson does have a long, long track record of speaking out on the side of racial equality. And not just talking the talk, but also walking the walk, which is partly why you heard LeBron say that in the past, he's had a lot of respect for Jackson. But apparently now that has changed. Here's the rest of what he said this morning.
I've been in this league 14 years, and you know, from the beginning, you know, 2 years in, I felt like that I wanted to, you know, put my guys in position of power and give those guys an opportunity to better themselves. And, you know, in the beginning, we were highly criticized, and I was highly criticized about what I wanted to do to help some guys around me become very successful in business. And, you know, it just sucks that, now at this point, having one of the, biggest businesses that you can have both on and off the floor, having a certified agent in Rich Paul, having a certified business partner in Maverick Carter, that's done so many great business, that the title for young African Americans is the word posse. You know, so it's for me, we see the success that we had, but then it is always someone that lets you know how far we still have to go as African Americans. You know, and I just don't believe that Phil Jackson would have used that same term if he was doing business with someone else. Working with another team, or he was working with anybody in sports that was owning a team that wasn't African American and had a group of guys around him that he didn't agree with what they did. I don't think he would have called him a posse. But it just shows how far we still have to go. He says it out to the media. I can only imagine what he says when the camera's not on him or the headset is not on or whatever you guys record on. So he's got a lot more work to do.
So that is extremely strong. First, the comment where he says, I can only imagine what he says when the camera isn't on him. That's a shot. And then also making the point that he thinks this is explicitly about race, because he says that he doesn't think Phil Jackson would use that term if he wasn't talking about someone who was African-American. I mean, what did you take away from this whole situation?
Well, I mean, there's several levels, right? Level one is we can focus on the word. The word definitely is loaded language. Mm-hmm. As people of color, we are accustomed to this, that in society, people don't say the words that right. they want to say a lot of times, so they use kind of this coded language, and that's supposed to refer to, you know, the one that a lot of comedians always use, the you people.
Right.
Right. That's a variation of you people, particularly when you talk about the term posse, really, as it refers to people who are around professional athletes. It really started in the early 90s, this idea that the guys around them are their posse, right? And at the most benign level, you're talking about some dude on your couch eating Cheetos. So I'm like, hey, we need some more beer. At the most obscene level, it's the guys that handle the problems because mm-hmm. I'm too big to handle the problems myself. Either way, that is a disrespectful characterization of Maverick Carter, of Rich Paul,
and
the people around LeBron James.
Very disrespectful. Where we come from, you very seldom get an opportunity to reach the top and be successful with the people who struggle with you. Coming from that area, you salute LeBron James and being able to put his two friends in position of power and doing it the right way.
Right.
A lot of guys get this opportunity and not able to get it done. LeBron has done it the right way. Mav has done it the right way. Rich has done it the right way. You have to salute them. I would definitely feel offended by those remarks, by all the hard work they've put, by all the hard work LeBron does. You know, it's an insult, and I would take it as such.
I mean, Rich Paul represents the number one overall draft pick in last year's draft, Ben Simmons. I mean, this is a business and a series of businesses that have had great success, to your mm-hmm. point. And I think there's also a history here that LeBron referred to in that clip that he's had to endure. I mean, remember the letter that Dan Gilbert wrote when he left Cleveland that had a lot of racial overtones and was a big problem for a lot of people. There was some back and forth with Pat Riley in Miami that's clearly not quite over. Mm-hmm. And now this, and I mean, you were talking about a point in Phil Jackson's, one of his books where
right.
this came up.
In the book, The Last Season, there was an excerpt specifically about LeBron James. And he says, and here's a quote right here. In the Cleveland game, I was impressed with LeBron James, who has made strides since we played the Cavs during the exhibition season. Yet, as talented as this kid definitely appears to be, I don't believe he or any 19-year-old should be playing in the NBA.
Wait for it.
These young men grow so dependent on their posses, who fetch their cars and their girls, that they can't possibly develop into mature, self-sufficient human beings. One day, I'm convinced, we'll find out the true extent of the psychological damage that's being caused. Don't tell me that he was just using a word to mean like, oh, the guys in the Old West. There's a very specific connotation there that he's used before
in relation
specifically to LeBron James, right? And the other thing I wanted to touch upon, beyond that, and I don't want to distract from that, but what Stephen said is really interesting. Because a lot of times in this country, disenfranchised people are not able to progress, not because they're not talented enough or smart enough, but because the opportunities are not there, right? So I said about this on the NBA Lockdown podcast. In the autobiography of Malcolm X, he talks about working for a guy named West Indian Archie, a numbers runner. Mm-hmm. He said this guy was a math genius, but because he never had anybody give him opportunity or steer him in the right way, he becomes a numbers runner, a organized crime guy. In a different set of circumstances where people are investing in you as a human being, this guy could have been a math professor. Same thing here. LeBron James is given opportunities to dudes who otherwise probably wouldn't have had those. Now, it's up to them to make the most of those opportunities, and they have.
And that, by the way, is its own whole separate storyline that we don't talk about that much with LeBron James. But the way he has empowered black business owners, the way he has created businesses for people who, as you say, is disenfranchised, is something in the number of things that we do or don't give him credit for probably should get talked about more. And if it was, frankly, J.J. Redick and a bunch of his friends from Duke that we were talking about here, and one of his guys negotiated a $1 billion deal with Nike, which, by the way, this group of guys did, and then started two entertainment companies that have deals with Warner Brothers and NBC, I don't think anyone's using the word posse, correct?
Got an office on Warner Brothers lot. That's huge. But the thing is, too, if you ever seen Dan Gilbert travel, he travels with 20 people. Around the time David Falk, he traveled with a lot of people. Orrin Tellem had a lot of people traveling with him. Was that a posse then? No, but you have a rich young black man, 35 years old, that's doing it the right way. It's always going to be a problem.
Context of white supremacy. The problem is white people. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, November 17th, 2016. So I have been told this is our weekly session on workplace racism. Dial in if you have commentary to share, strategies, suggestions. If you've had some success within the context of you have figured out some techniques, strategies that have worked for you in minimizing problems, eliminating conflict with other non-white coworkers, other white coworkers, definitely dial in. If you are quote unquote self-employed, dial in. You should be one of the first folks on the line to share your experience as a black entrepreneur with racism. Working for yourself, has that helped you minimize racism to some degree? Has it put you in position to better navigate racism, white supremacy? Are you still having to deal with a lot of similar issues of racism, white supremacy? Dial in, let us know. The number 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Share the broadcast on your social media sites if you think it would benefit other non-white people to listen to or participate in this evening's broadcast. You can post it. You're on Twitter. You can retweet. I'm on Twitter @UntilJustice. You can retweet the posting for this evening, information for the broadcast, dial-in number, link so people can listen online. I will again say this is one of the broadcasts where I emphasize this is not about being a spectator. Mr. Fuller encourages that with regards to counter-racism. We want to make sure that we are actively employing the information that we get, counter-racist logic, counter-racist science. We want to make sure that we are employing, sharing that information actively and not just kind of absorbing, gathering the information as a spectator. Certainly with workplace racism, I am very sure if you are a non-white person anywhere in the world and you have a job, you have any sort of work experience, racism, white supremacy is and or has been a problem for you. Probably will be if you continue to work. I mean, it is omnipresent. And I think we would put ourselves in a better position if we can just get to a point where we can kind of speak honestly about that. some of the problems that we've had. I think, number one, we'll see a lot of patterns in terms of whites doing similar things. And then I also think we can figure out some strategies in terms of better ways to manage all of this with the end goal of ending racism, white supremacy. But en route to that, minimizing our problems as best we can and figuring out as much information as possible that will help us in the people activity area of labor. With that, I will only say quickly the segment at the beginning of the program, this is not sports and we're just going to sit around and do jock talk, but I posted that report because it certainly is related to racism, white supremacy. I posted the report and somebody said, one of our listeners said, oh man, that's workplace racism, right? Which is not, you know, the original context that I was thinking of it, but I said, absolutely. And I posted a different article because obviously that, you know, LeBron James being one of the most popular folks in the world right now, and Phil Jackson is certainly one of the more popular basketball names, that tiff that they have had has gathered a lot of attention. So I posted an article, and then I heard that report from ESPN's The Jump. I heard that today, actually, just broadcast, I think, yesterday or a little bit earlier in the week. But I think they hit a lot of points to emphasize both the racism, white supremacy aspect and the black business aspect. The only thing that I will say before we move on and get to some of our callers is a point that I have emphasized over the years, specifically on workplace racism, is that I think frequently we are led to believe or we hope that if we can just demonstrate our competence, right, as black people, whatever our field is, right, we're mathematicians, scientists, whatever your chosen job, your educator, if I can just come in and demonstrate that I know my material, that I studied hard and I'm here and I want to do the best possible job that I can, we think that, oh, okay, well, great. You know, they will see that and they will appreciate and value us as human beings. That's not what the system of racism, white supremacy is all about. That's not what the global white minority is about at all. You have, hands down, best basketball player in the world on the defending champion basketball team in the NBA, finals MVP, $30 million per year. He's making over $30 million this year. And that's the way that he and his entourage, that's the way that they are talked about. This is some posse. This is, you know, some collection of hoodlums and thugs and random, you know, Negro hooligans that we have to tolerate because they are with LeBron James. That's the way that he and his friends are talked about. I also thought it was really important quickly that they, like, listed with LeBron James business partners and associates. They listed like their specific accomplishments and business deals that they had done with Nike and production studios and media companies. They like itemized all the things that they've done to be like, yeah, these are respectable Negroes. With Phil Jackson, they give him accolades, right, saying that this is someone who has a long history of speaking out for racial equality. They did not list one thing. They didn't say what he said in response to Donald Sterling. They didn't come out to say anything about hiring black coaches in the NBA. Like, I don't remember anything of them, you know, saying, hey, Phil Jackson did this to address racism. Phil Jackson did that to address racism. Not one thing. It's just supposed to be taken that we said this is a good white man who has a history of working against racism, and that shouldn't be questioned. There should be no suspicion about that at all. Moving forward, a couple quick things people wrote in. I state this every week. If you're unable to participate live and you want to email, right, you have commentary, question, whatever, suggestion, you can email it untiljustice@gmail.com, and I will share with listeners. You can get live commentary. I will keep my eye on my email as the program progresses. Again, untiljustice@gmail.com. Feel free to drop an email. We'll read it on the air. Okay, some of the people that wrote in already. Let's see. First one. The whole issue reminds me of another workplace racism incident, and also the advice you and the callers have given about not having books about racism at the office. I tried to purchase 40 Hours and an Unwritten Rule by Kim Williams, former guest on the program, which was to be delivered to the office where I work. Needless to say, it did not arrive. I've had numerous items delivered to the office, including from Amazon, without issue, but for some reason, this item has never arrived. I contacted the vendor who claimed to have posted it, but strangely, he did not have a tracking number. I work in a government building, and the post is always logged, so either way, there should have been a record of its arrival. Because of this, I was able to get money returned pretty easily, but I find the whole thing very peculiar. I've since had books and other items delivered without problem. That said, I've learned my lesson and heed the advice from you and the callers, and am now very careful about what I read at work. I still do get items delivered, but I'm going to reduce this to emergencies only. Yes, because of another trifling and tacky incident, the postroom staff used to deliver personal items directly to staff at our desks. However, this stopped probably about a year ago, as I guess people were ordering too much and it was taking up a lot of time. The new process is that we collect our items directly from post room. One such occasion, the post room was being manned by someone who seems to have taken an interest in my bank account. He commented that we are obviously paying you too much. He then said that he hopes that he doesn't see me again until Christmas. It was nowhere near Christmas, so I was confused. There was another person who was also there to collect a personal item. He got the joke and explained to me that I was being told to reduce how many packages I get delivered to the office. However, he was not given the same advice. It was a while before I had anything delivered to the office again, and when I did, I actually went through a phase of avoiding the trifling, tacky individual. All of a sudden, my personal packages started arriving on my desk without me having to go and collect them myself. I do get on well with most of the post room staff, so although I was surprised, I thought it was one of the non-white staff. Sometimes they do bring my packages to my desk. However, one day I saw the joker on the ground floor, and he informed me that he had taken a package to my desk and that he had given one of my colleagues information about a company that I could order clothes from and get great discounts. I asked if he had shares in the company, as it made no sense why he would be passing this information on via a colleague. He said no, it's just that he knows I like to shop a lot. I got back to my desk, the package was there, but no one has passed on any information about this so-called new store that provides great discounts. I believe he did discuss my shopping habits with people in my team who are just like him, out of pure nastiness. I now make a point of emailing the post room when I'm notified of a delivery to make sure my items are left in the post room for me to collect myself. End of field notes. Just for context, this is a non-white male caller in the UK. So this is a world problem. I've been trying to figure out how to include our global callers in workplace racism. I have not figured that out yet, but certainly the email in is one. So this is same type of thing happening on the other side of the planet. Next up. Hi, Gus. Jack from Atlanta. It's been a couple of weeks since I last wrote, and I want to begin with a quick observation before I get to my workplace racism. Today at school, I was walking to class and a car full of white guys was approaching, four or five of them. One of the guys in the back seat stuck his head out the window and had, how many times have I heard that this week? I feel very vindicated. I'm not going to do too much because, I mean, we still are on the plantation of white supremacy, but the purge. I posted about it repeatedly on Facebook because I just keep seeing it, talking about purging this group of people or purging these people. The title just keeps coming up and keeps coming up and keeps coming up. With relationship to racism, white supremacy, those purge films that we discussed with Dr. Martin Kevorkian extremely important. But continuing, he says that one of the guys, this group of white guys in the back seat, stuck his head out the window and had a Purge mask on from the second movie, if you have seen it. White mask that has good and evil on it. He yelled something at me as they passed, but I didn't hear clearly what he said because I had my earphones in. I just thought that was interesting. Absolutely. Anyhow, on Tuesday of this week, I had two incidents, one after the other, at the job. Again, I work in the aquatics fitness department, just as a reminder. There's this black autistic kid, no older than 12 or 13 years old, who comes to swim early mornings, and he has a young white female caretaker from Europe. He was in a lane with a white woman who was lap swimming. He wasn't bothering the lady or getting in the way, but he would go underwater as she swam by and he would wave at her. The lady didn't really pay him any mind. There was this other white lady about two lanes over flagging at me and my coworker to tell him to stop and to move out of the woman's way, which he wasn't in to begin with. She stops and stares at him with the death stare. When it was time for them to go, the caretaker had trouble getting him out of the water, so I assisted. He then started splashing the water as he made his way out of the water. The white lady from a few lanes over comes over to me and a coworker once she's done swimming and says, "You know, that kid was really strong and he could have hurt that girl." I say, "Yes, he's autistic, but he's a pretty good kid." She replies, "Well, sometimes they aren't able to control their strength and I'm concerned for her." I explain that the caretaker has been watching him for months and she does a decent job. She says, "Really? Wow, but he's so strong." Once she left, my white coworker says to me, "Hey, did you pick up on that?" I said, "Of course." And he said she was being racist and joked that she was really describing King Kong. I thought that was interesting for him to say that. Absolutely. Once the shift was over, I go upstairs to where... I thought that was the second racist incident. Okay, we got a third incident, it seems. I go upstairs to work out, and at the desk was this mildly mentally retarded white man standing there. A couple of gym workers greet me, and I reply, and once again, this retarded man says, "What's up, shawty?" I almost let it slide, but this is the third time, and I had to check him. I said, "A, address me as Jack." And he says, "Oh, so I can't call you shawty." I said, "No, you address me as Jack." He then responds, "Well, what about bro? Can I call you bro?" I again say, "No, call me Jack." He says, "Okay," with a slick smirk on his face. He later tried apologizing, but I wasn't hearing it. I will pause there, that is the end of the note. Fascinating for many reasons. I think that might even qualify as three different incidents of racism, white supremacy, back to back to back. But the King Kong for sure. And then the final one, I think, for anyone who, I'll just leave it at, what does it mean to be white? What does that classification really entail? Are we talking about, quote unquote, color? Or are we talking about being at war and terrorizing everybody that they classify as not white? What are we really talking about when we say, "I am a white man, white woman, white child, white mentally handicapped individual"? What does that really mean? We will hit the phone lines. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Once again, if you have portions of your workplace policy and procedure that are significant, or the wording, or you see where policy is not being equally enforced, definitely dial in and share. Very important. Make sure you're going over that policy and procedure before there is a problem. Everyone who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open. If you could remember to watch the background noise, that would be grand. Feel free to share.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you guys. Greetings to all the calls and the listeners. Oh, I wanted to thank you, too, for sending the debate. I did receive it, so I appreciate that quite a bit. I wanted to start with the clip you played on LeBron James. Again, that clip speaks to the brilliance of the illustrious Neely Fuller Jr. That clip is a prime reason why the term success is an oxymoron in the system of white supremacy, simply because, you know, what we have been trained to deem as success is financial accumulation. That's not success. Success is what white people have, where they can go anywhere they want, do or say whatever they want, not be shot down unarmed, not be mistreated. That is what success looks like, is what white people display. The people who pay LeBron James's paycheck, they're successful. He has gotten a lot of financial accumulation. He's made a lot of great strides as a sports figure and as a businessman, doing the right thing and being showing black self-respect by helping other black males facilitate their own financial accumulation as well. But ultimately, that's not success. And also, I love when you brought up the section where they talk about Phil Jackson and the fact that they never elucidated anything that he's ever done to fight racism. It's because he hasn't done the darn thing. And even if they listed 100 things, it doesn't mean a thing. You're white, so you're racist, and anything you do is a ruse to give other non-white people the appearance that you're not the racist that you actually are. And of course, the rest of the clip played out to show him to be exactly what he was, a pink pus white supremacist. Also, the case that you read, one of the cases from the writer in the UK, I found it telling that this is also something that I've heard Neely Fuller say before, the fact that white people and black people may speak English, but we speak two different languages. And I thought that was a prime example of that, when his coworker had to explain what the white coworker was saying in regards to him having so many packages come in. The fact that he wasn't able, because I immediately understood what that meant on a subconscious level, what he was basically saying. But it was interesting that the brother didn't get it, and it took the white guy actually reiterating it in a more simplified, straightforward manner to bring that whole situation full circle for him to understand exactly what was going on. So again, the brilliance of Neely Fuller Jr. and the fact that white people and black people speak two different languages. To get into my own workplace observations, this is interesting. I was watching a news clip this morning, and this one is actually positive. It's about black self-respect on the job. And there was a black garbage man that was profiled on the news who basically picks up garbage in the area in New Jersey, and there's a young black child, maybe about between the ages of 2 and 3 years old, and he would always see this. And he lives with his mother. She's a single mother. And he would see this black garbage man every day. And he was not every day, but every week. And he was fascinated with the garbage man. So eventually he started going out in the mornings when the garbage man would come, and he introduced himself. They became very, very friendly. And essentially every week, this young black male, he actually had his mother buy him a toy garbage truck. And he actually brings his own garbage out every time the black male comes to pick up the garbage. And he runs to this black male, show the footage. And the black male scoops him up, you know, spins him around, gives him a hug, asks him how he's doing. And they have the whole conversation. And essentially, just the ability to tune in to the fact that when you're doing your job, you're picking up garbage, this single black mother has a young black male, and you're able to be a positive role model in such a way that this young black child is literally waiting, like, you know, just excitedly waiting every week. And this happens every week, and it's been happening for over a year. And I just found that fascinating that he was able to tune into that young black male and just facilitate a positive experience and being a positive black male in this young black male's life. So I just thought that was brilliant. At my own job, I have a coworker that's Puerto Rican, sits next to me, a female. And essentially, she's been getting racism, white supremacy from this freckled white troll that's our supervisor. And cumulatively, it came to a head yesterday. And she started to get very upset, and she was on the verge of crying on a few occasions. So I started to have a conversation with her and just try to find out how she was doing. And you know, they told her she needed anything, she could let me know. And eventually, she admitted to me that she has PTSD. And that the incidents that she's been dealing with cumulatively with this white psychopath has pushed her to a place where the PTSD has come back in a way in which she was unprepared for. And as a result, she was actually considering like quitting, and she was just really, really just taken aback with the whole situation. So I was able to actually talk with her and just give her some sound advice. And, you know, we just actually, I just try to help her calm down and just get back to a place of peace in some way so that she can try and make it through that the rest of the day. So eventually she ended up having a meeting with the supervisor, and in the meeting, because she had never brought up the PTSD to the supervisor, because first of all, she said that in the past she's dealt with being stigmatized due to having PTSD, and she didn't want to experience that at this job. So she never told anyone, and I totally understood. I said, I totally understand and respect that decision. And she was highly upset that she felt pressured enough, and she was triggered to such a point that she felt she had to confide this and how she got to this point based on the cumulative situations we've all been dealing with on the team. But there are certain situations that were specifically targeted towards her. So she had this meeting, and the white female literally says, and this is the term she used, interesting. She didn't say, I find it interesting. She just said, interesting. And essentially, she alluded to the fact that she didn't necessarily believe my coworker. And my coworker ended up having to take off today to go see a mental health practitioner to get her records so that she can facilitate, first of all, proving to these racist terrorists that she does have that illness. And then second of all, facilitating FMLA, because I did explain to her what it was and how it works, because I said you would be a prime candidate for something like that in order to protect your job. And in a situation where they push you to a point mentally where you can't handle what's going on, or you feel like they're pushing you to, you know, the precipice of your sanity, you can take off and protect your job without them being able to do anything about it. So she's facilitating that. I was texting with her today, and she said she'll be back at work tomorrow, and she's going to have the paperwork filled out by her mental health practitioner. And I told her, I said, it's really interesting that we work in the healthcare industry where we deal with strangers, the vast majority of them terrorists, mutant white people, and we're able and have to show empathy because these people are calling with all kinds of mutant diseases, and she does the same as a supervisor when she has to answer calls, but yet you have an employee that sits right in front of you, and you have no empathy for her, for what she's dealing with, and you actually told her you don't believe her. I said, now, what if I doubt she would do that if some white person called to the job for assistance and basically treat them the way that she treated my coworker. And she totally understood where I was coming from. And I said, well, you know, keep me posted. If there's anything you can do, I can do to help you, please let me know, you know. And I just told her, I thank her for even trusting me enough to confide something like that in me. And, you know, absolutely, that will be between her and I as far as me not, you know, telling anyone else on the job or just exposing her business. But I just said, you know, hopefully the information that I was able to provide to you was helpful. And when she texted me today, she said that it was extremely helpful. She was extremely thankful for just me being able to be there to listen to what she had to say and give her advice that she was able to utilize to help herself. So that is my workplace racism incident, and thank you again, and I'll meet my line.
Wow. That is commendations in order. That's awesome black self-respect. I guess there were two with the young child and the black male going out. I think Dr. Welsing would smile on that one. I think she always encouraged us, all black people, to make sure you have an A+. In sweeping and not throwing trash down where black people live is one of her stops. But the additional incident of black self-respect, helping out a black coworker, even though I know that's not everyone here's code, just trying to get her information where she could, you know, try to take care of her mental health as best she could. And I think a lot of us are probably in that sort of position where we have already been traumatized and have major mental health issues already as a result of white supremacy. And then you go on a job and you're being terrorized in a variety of different ways where it just, you know, it can cause ailments that you already have to flare up where you feel like you're going through that same sort of abuse all over again. So, and I appreciated you highlighting that this is supposed to be you're employed at some sort of mental health business. That's, you know, what you all are doing, and the lack of empathy, as you stated, the lack of compassion for this black female employee. I guess the only other thing I would add is that's one of those things in terms when we talk about equal enforcement of policy. Any other coworkers who work there, particularly a white person, if they suggest that they have some sort of ailment or health problem, are they required to show documentation? Is that consistent? So if somebody else, if a white person comes in and they say they have PTSD or a hangnail or whatever it is it the same procedure that we immediately take the position that, you know, we're suspicious that there could be some effort to deceive us. So we need, you know, doctor's note saying, yeah, you got a hangnail or you got, you know, PTSD or whatever symptom or ailment that you allege. Is that standard procedure here at the company? Just paying attention to see if that sort of thing is consistent.
Matter of fact, thanks for saying that, because I'm going to actually suggest that to her, because that makes perfect sense, because I've seen white people come in there and make up all kinds of things, and they're immediately believed, like Phil Jackson. Nothing is questioned. It's just, okay, we're just going to go along with whatever they say. And with this person, it was the complete opposite. And it, like I said, it's been a cumulative set of situations. She said she hasn't had a flare-up in about a year. And that was the last time she went to a mental health practitioner. And in literally, she came to my team in September. So between September and now, she literally was pushed so far in about 2 months' time that she's back to where she was a year ago. And when her and I were talking about this, the little white creature was literally lurking around trying to hear what we had to say, what we were saying to each other. But we were codified. I have a fan at my desk. I turned it up as high as possible, and we were able to have, you know, conversation before she came around, because she was in a meeting. When she came out the meeting, she was lurking around like a little troll. And, you know, we were able to still, you know, facilitate helping her and giving her the information that she needed. And I told her, I said to my coworker, I said, listen, she's a white supremacist. And I basically said to her, all of these people are racist. And I said, what you're going to find is that some people are more refined in their racism than others. And she started off refined and slowly started to ratchet up her behavior with this with my coworker. And this is the same supervisor who had been harassing the black male, who did not give her any sexual type of attention when she was coming on to him. She's from Virginia, so, I mean, she's a special kind of racist. And from what he told me recently, she has dated black men before. So she is a nasty terrorist, and she has nasty whiteheads on her chest, and she comes in there with her freckles, and her whole demeanor lets me know that there's something about her demeanor and the way she carries herself that lets me know, from how she's dealt with other non-white females, that she does not like being the pasty female that she is. She has, like, she's so pasty with freckles, it's nauseating to look at her. And I can tell from how she's interacted with other non-white females that she has an issue with her pastiness. So I have a feeling that that also has a role to play in it, but ultimately she's just psychotic, and my coworker was able to understand what I was saying, because I gave a couple of examples with other coworkers that were white, that were more refined versus her, who was become less refined. Thank you again, and I'll mute my line.
Indeed. Wow. That is, I know Dr. Cambon, he said before as well, when you start to feel as though you're being mistreated or abused on the workplace, whatever actions or steps you think would be best to take on the job, certainly documentation will be a part of that, electronic or otherwise. He also says, you know, see some sort of mental health professional, particularly if you can find a non-white person, a black person. That way you have your mental health documentation started. If they have a company provider, you can see them. If you have someone outside of that, that can be good too. So you can be documenting, have documentation ready when they don't believe you to say, yes, this has been ongoing. I've been reporting some of these issues. I've tried to address these problems. They haven't been remedied. And bam, my mental health practitioner, my mental health representative, documentation from his professional opinion on how my health has degraded as I've had to endure this toxic work environment. They can put all the nice words to it and everything. The other folks that we have not heard from, if you have questions about what you just heard from Roz, or any of the situations from the callers that wrote in, if you have your own situation you would like to address, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Let's see. We will take 2812.
Good evening to the callers. Good evening, guys. Long week. I've been calling in for maybe the last couple of months. I'm in the mortgage business, and today, a couple of things. So Monday, I go into my new office, been with the company for about 2 weeks, and there's an older white gentleman who walks in there. And typically, I'm in the office by myself a lot, but and this guy seems to come around. And so he came in there, and we started talking about baseball. And it was funny because I'm not going to say my name on the program, but my father named me after probably one of the greatest baseball players of all time, Hank Aaron. And so this guy asked me who my favorite baseball player was, and I didn't know if I wanted to answer it or not. And I said, you know what? I said, Hank Aaron is considered one of the best players of all time. And I mentioned Willie Mays and Roberto Clemente. And anybody that knows anything about baseball, you know, those guys, along with, you know, just others, they're pretty popular. So this guy says, well, you forgot about Ted Williams. And in my brain, I'm saying, I didn't forget about Ted Williams. And he literally goes into this whole story of Ted Williams and all this other kind of stuff. And I was just like, you just had to bring up this white guy. So then the same white guy comes to my office Wednesday, 2 days later. And he starts to talk to me about something. He sees a bag I have. And, my two favorite hobbies are reading and basketball. I love basketball. I love the game. And he was like, oh, well, you know, I used to live in Boston. And Bill Russell, he was on those great Celtics teams. And he was like, yeah, they had Bob Cousy and John Havlicek. And I said something like, well, Bill Russell wasn't on those teams. Red Auerbach had stated pretty clearly that they wouldn't have won anything. And he said, yeah, you're probably right about that. I said, those teams were bad until Russell got there. And so he said all of a sudden out of the blue, oh, yeah, well, when I was up there, I can't believe what they did to Bill Russell because of the color of his skin. You know, it was terrible up north. They really treated him bad. And I'm like, is this guy serious? And I said, well, how so? He was like, oh, I can't really talk about it, but it was just really, really bad. And it sounded like to me he might have been involved in it. That was just an observation. And then today we had a grand opening for the office. Lots of white people, lots of alcohol. So it didn't really get super, super tacky. The manager that I said last week had made the racist joke about immigrants having visas. He was there. He wasn't really tacky. He seemed like he calmed down a little bit. But there was one gentleman that walked into, and in mind, just everybody in there is wearing suits. Everybody in there is, professionally dressed. And all of this a brother walks in, and he's got a do-rag on his head. And before I was confused, I would have looked at him. But I just kind of stepped back and just started looking at their faces, and every person that classified as white, their faces went like, oh, how did this guy get in here? And I think he was a construction guy that did work for our real estate company, and other people knew him, but everybody knew him was like, oh, I can't believe that this guy kind of walked in there. And so it was a good meeting because I always like to learn. The CEO of the real estate company that owns our office was there. He was talking a lot about, this is a white guy, talking about the expansion and why their company was good and things of that nature. But you know, one of the things that I'm observing and working in this business for how I've learned is that literally in real estate, and I actually got this by reading that debate that Des had sent the other day, but if we just simply follow those the stops that Dr. Welfing, you know, talked about, and one of them specifically is just not throwing down trash, everything that white supremacy has is all based upon black dysfunction, every single thing. And I'm just noticing that it's almost imperative that they need us to almost function in a manner that's just non-constructive, because if we don't function if we function in a constructive manner, nothing they have has value. All the real estate, and the only reason that all this real estate, all these millions of dollars these guys make, is because that people classify themselves as white have to have somewhere else to live other than where Negroes live. Well, if all the schools and everything that Negroes have are good, which I'm learning about just in real estate, those places have value. And I mean, just literally small things like that, you can put a dent, not solve the whole system, and you can just put a dent in it. So, you know, just being more constructive and just trying to reduce some of my anti-blackness at the job. A lot of people in my new office that I met today, brothers and sisters, doing real estate, real constructive people. A lot of people I'm noticing not very confused either about what's going on in the demographic. And so it's been pretty positive. And, you know, like I said last week, if anybody has any questions about mortgages or real estate, you know, you can drop Gus a line and he'll shoot me an email. I'll be more than happy to have you regardless of what state I'm in. So thanks, Gus. Appreciate it. I'm beating my line.
Spectacular. Spectacular. Thomas in New York, I think you spoke up simultaneously. If you were going to share also, feel free. Thank you for your patience, sir.
Absolutely, man. That was a great story, the guy shit. One of my codifications, I stopped talking about sports at work with white people, and just sitting back and watching my coworker at one of my jobs who is, you know, he's into these heated arguments with them. Just thinking how stupid he looks, like, man, I just can't do it. I'm so glad I added that to my code because, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, they own all the teams. I mean, like the LeBron James thing. I called in a little late. I didn't hear the clip, and I'm kind of pissed at myself for not being aware of this whole thing going on with LeBron James. This is the first I'm hearing about it, unfortunately. But I would say LeBron James sealed his fate when he decided on his own to go play in Miami with the white media so angry at him. How dare this slave decide he's going to go to another plantation? It was just, I think, one of those things that they're never going to forgive him for, and they're going to always try to attack him for the rest of his career. And how dare they, you know, wear the shirts and say anything about the Trayvon thing. I mean, the little bit that he has said and done, they have it out for him. And, you know, it's unfortunate. Hopefully he can keep himself out of trouble so they, because anything he does, you know, they're going to get him. I think that the entourage thing, I remember when Allen Iverson played. I mean, that was the first time I ever heard about this entourage. And then it just seemed like all the players had this entourage. And it was just, that's just one of the things they're going to use. I'm sure all the white players have an entourage. I mean, they even made a show out of it with the white actors. And but being that they're black, they're already, you know, not wanted. And that's how it's going to be. Other than that, I wanted to say, to the person about the packages, working in the mailroom, yeah, we talk about the people who come in with packages, and I've never worked with a bunch of white people in the mailroom, so I could imagine how they talk about someone black that has stuff delivered to them all the time. I mean, they probably just, because we talk about it like, can you believe this? I mean, her husband must be pissed with me. That's why she has everything sent to work, because, you know, just thinking, you know, just seeing all the stuff they get is very very talkworthy. And also, another thing, be careful of this, because we have the equipment in the mailroom to open a package and seal it right back like it never was opened. So some things do get looked through. And that's all I want to say about that as well. As far as my own workplace racism, and I have to say kudos to Roz for helping out a fellow victim in her situation. My situation at my first job, the racist who's was the Trump supporter, her last day is next Wednesday. She was able to land a job. I found out that she was a temp, and she was there for temping for 9 months. And, you know, just hearing some of her stories, you know, I don't empathize with white people, but, you know, I told her, man, I wouldn't have even gave him the 2 weeks' notice, but she left. She's leaving next Wednesday, so, you know, so I'm going to miss out on conversations she usually brings up. Other than that, my other job, that's not workplace racism. That's just straight-up racism. I mean, I don't even get into that stuff because it doesn't even – it's not even going to sound like workplace racism with the stories that go on at the hospital. It's just straight-up, outright racism. And I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Dang. Other people that we have stay tuned for compensatory call-in, I guess. Other people that have commentary that they would like to share, feel free. I do think that's a great code. I think I've heard that from other folks as well in terms of they do not talk about, like, sports, athletics in the workplace. Some of them have even extended it beyond that to where it's just they don't do that, period, regardless of where they are. They don't do I'm not talking about the ball game last night. Like, I don't pay attention to sports. I think that's constructive as well. Other folks that we have not heard from have questions, comments, your own experiences you want to share. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so like I think I explained on Saturday, I called into the compensatory call-in and told you about a white person who was basically saying like some stuff about Trump. So that's in my training. That's currently in my training class. So today, like, the training class is, like, basically a classroom environment. So sometimes we get off topic and talk about other stuff. So, and mind you, it's literally 13, it's 12 black people and I guess a non-white Mexican person and a white person. So anyway, so we were in the classroom. We were talking about, like, you know, the black people, they always get off topic or whatever. They were talking about, we're talking about getting whoopings. So somehow we were on the topic of getting whoopings. So he's like, I have a story. So he starts talking and he says, so basically he told us that he had a daughter at 3 years old. He left. He didn't see her until she was 13. I guess her mother had abandoned her, so he took her over basically. So at 13, so anyway, she's in high school. So he says she comes home to him and she's crying. And he's like, you know, why are you crying or whatever? And so basically she shows him a picture of her boyfriend. Her boyfriend is black. So anyway, and this is all before he even gets on the topic of this is before he even gets topic of whoopings. So anyway, the boyfriend's black. So he's like, oh, wow. He's like, I started crying too. And then he went and got a picture of his old girlfriend, of his girlfriend. She was like, well, this is who I was dating while I was not with your mother. And it was a dang black lady. And I was like, man, this dude is crazy. So anyway, and before that, he made like a speech, like saying like how basically he was like, man, I really like being in a class with all you guys. He was like, I thought it was going to be diverse, but basically saying, I thought it was going to be diverse, but this place hires a lot of black people. But I really like it and I love you guys. So basically, so he went into that and then he went into his story. So after that, he went into a story about, I guess the black father of his grandchildren. Cause those two are still together. So the black father, he whooped their grandkids, and I guess somehow he made it to be like he checked the father to not. He was like, man, you know, I don't want you to whoop the kids, like don't whoop the kids and whatever. So anyway, he went into a story, and then this another thing that he said. He was like, man, the black guy, he looks kind of like, he was basically saying the black dude looked like me. He was like, yeah, he was a tall, handsome guy. I'm like, dude, what the heck? Like, why are you even saying that? But anyway, so he says that, and then he goes, he talked about how he checked them on whooping the kids, and then he went on to say, man, like I want you guys to know I really like it here. And then so I said earlier, our facilitator, he's like a gay dude, so a gay black dude, and he was like, man, it was really cool, like you accept, like I really thought it was cool that you were accepting. And then like everybody clapped after the story. It was extremely sickening. Like while I was there, I was literally getting sick to my stomach. It was terrible. Like it was horrible to hear. And that's pretty much all I had.
That's a lot of sexual conversation for the job. Like, is that common? Like to be talking about all this, you know, who was with?
Yeah, I know. I don't know. It is kind of, but it's a classroom environment. So it's just us and a facilitator. So we kind of can't, so it's really nobody else in there except us. So I think everybody's young except him pretty much. So it's not like, yeah, so basically, it's just a bunch of young black people, so that's definitely going to come up, I think. So it's not really the most professional. Like, in the area that we're in, it's not super professional because we're not on the floor yet. Like, we work at a call center, so we're not on the floor yet, so it's not too much micromanaging and stuff yet.
You foresee that changing?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I already know. Like, I was kind of thinking like, man, because selling cars is really no micromanaging, and I was like, that's really cool. But the thing is, at this job, it's way, like, even though you're micromanaged, like the job is super easy, so it doesn't even matter. Like, you don't take a bunch of calls. It's to me, it seems super easy, and you know, I'll be able to make the money that I want to, and with a better schedule than selling cars. So I think it'll be easier for me. But I know, like, it's gonna be a lot of politics. Like a lot of, like, cause it's a more, I guess, corporate job. It's not really corporate, but that's what somebody would say. Like, it's a lot of white people over you, and they like are actually act like professionals. Like in the car business, everybody acts like a scumbag. Like they're all like joking and talking about how they do drugs and whatever. But here, it's not like people do that stuff, but I know they act like they don't. So it's a different environment.
Yikes. Fascinating. Wow. I would, same recommendation that I give out regularly about that sort of environment, really any environment on the job, and it would probably hold even white people, non-white people. If I was working with a lot of black people, I would probably not engage in a whole lot of that on the job. I've just seen where that, 9 times out of 10, that does not end up working out in your favor on the job, sharing a lot of personal tidbits like that and sexual acts, just gossipy type stuff. I would participate. I think I've stated for years, I would try to get a reputation as someone who is known for not participating in that sort of foolishness on the job. Just, I'm on task. If we're here to be on calls and that sort of thing, then, you know, let's do that. That's what I'm about. That's what I would try to get a reputation for, because it just seems like that sort of thing pushes things where it's easy for a lot of unnecessary conflict and just a variety of things that end up not working out in our best interest.
I've
experienced that at a job with a black male coworker, and we were teasing him about his lack of having feminine activity. And, man, he wrote down everything. When they let him go, you know, that all came back. They ended up paying him money. He said he was sexually harassed. So just the conversation in general, and just looking at the presidential election, how the so-called locker room talk, you know, can be recorded.
I would make sure that if I'm in that type of conversation, no one is recording that. That could cost you your job maybe 5-10 years from now. Someone pull out that tape and you saying something that's inappropriate, could cost you a promotion or whatever. I would just not get involved with that at the workplace at all.
Hear, 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 hear.
May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I wanted to share some of my experiences with workplace racism this week. Monday, I was going to a client's home, self-employed in home repair remodeling. And on my way to a client's home, I made it a point to stop at the restroom before I got there. And I take the advice of Dr. Cambon. I usually have something on my body that I wear every single day that kind of just reminds me that I'm a victim of racism, a Black man, an African. I had a RBG sweatband, and I put it on my arm. Now I normally wear my hair in an afro, and I think it was an afro Monday, and I had the RGB band on my arm. I had a t-shirt on. And as I got out of my truck and walked into the corner store, it was a large chain store where a lot of white people were. I mean, the parking lot was full. There's probably 16 or so pumps there. So it's a very large gas station. And immediately, white people at the gas station, I could feel eyes on me. And I started walking towards the door, and there was a white man walking towards me. And when he was about 5 feet in front of me, he said, "You need to come on my side." And I didn't pay it any attention. He was looking my direction, but I really wasn't paying him any attention. I think he had a boy next to him, and the boy was actually standing in front of me. And then when I passed him, I realized what he was doing. He was telling the boy to get away from me. I walked into the gas station, you know, used the restroom, of course, and left. There was a law enforcement officer before I left the door, and he proceeded to look at me. And when I went through the door, walked through the door, and from my back, I saw he was looking at me as I walked to my truck. This particular part of town is known for that type of behavior, but I would expect nothing less from white people. It's just typical white terrorism. However, it did make me cognizant of the fact that sometimes this racism may be attempting to think of ways maybe to do us harm, and just kind of always being on task, being alert and aware of our surroundings. At all times, because these people that's what they do for fun, is find ways to terrorize. And I was surprised, because it's happened in the past that after a police officer has seen me, he has later pulled me over, and just after casually seeing me, gets in his car and follows me and pulls me over. But it did not happen this time. On Wednesday, yesterday, I was working at a trailer in a trailer park. And majority of people there were white people. The particular home that I went to was a white man's trailer, and he had me doing some work on the inside of the trailer home. It was interesting. I was actually listening on my headphones. I usually have a Bluetooth headset in, and I'm listening to different radio programs. I'm listening to the Context White Supremacy. I was actually listening to Tragic Arrangement, a couple from South Africa. So that was in my earpiece while he was talking and rambling to me. And he was asking me where I was from. And some people, they think, okay, you're not from Kansas City. You're not from here. Where are you from? And, you know, I'd said I was, you know, my parents are from West Africa and whatnot. He proceeded to start to ask me questions about my family that were kind of intimate. And I thought to myself, like, I'm doing work at your home, but I really don't think that necessarily gives you access to kind of ask me private questions. I kind of just skirted the issue, and as the call went on, and I was just trying to get my money and leave. I wanted to have nothing to do with it at all. He left the trailer and went to the store, and at that time, I was very weary because I was outside by myself. The door was open, you trailer park, you know, there's people looking everywhere. And I sat still again. It was almost like a repetition of Monday, where you could feel the eyes that were looking at you and just expecting you as like a good black boy to just sit there and don't move and wait till I get back. And it was extremely uncomfortable. He went to the store to get parts and get my money. I quickly left the store and went. Actually, after I left his house, I went to another gas station to use the restroom, and it was almost a repetition of the, this is twice now this week, where I walk into an establishment, everybody kind of drops what they do, look at the black guy walking in, and for whatever reason, use their eyes to show their displeasure with me being on site. The last thing that I just wanted to share, and again, mind you, I'm self-employed, so I quote unquote self-employed. So I don't have coworkers that work with me. I'm being treated this way, you know, in the quote unquote free market economy, away from it. It's difficult. And as the caller stated earlier about mental health, this particular instance, this particular instance of mental health, it deals directly with. So I was advised by a brother who, again, just like the brother who was in real estate, another brother helped me out. He gave me some information and he pointed me in the right direction towards a school that does a lot of educational training for other black people, non-white people in the community. And they focus on non-white people, specifically black men and women, giving them skills, vocational skills. And I own a truck, so I said, well, let me look at getting a CDL license. And the process, I thought this was extremely interesting. The process for enrolling in this school is that you had to not only take an aptitude test, but you had to take a psychological evaluation. And they want to determine if you have a disability. And the director of the school told me, he asked me, do you have any disabilities? And I said, to my knowledge, sir, I don't. He said, you're a black male. He's the director is a black male, but he looked at me and he told me, you're a black man, in a few words. Something has to be wrong. So I thought, okay, this brother, you know, he's on to something. You know, he knows what he's talking about. Because, of course, under the system of racism and white supremacy, we're always going to be mentally terrorized. Of course, like Dr. Wilson said, we don't qualify for mental health. So they send me to a psychologist. And just like was stated earlier, I was put in front of another non-white person, a black female, and I was put into a quiet room, and she sat me down, and she asked me, and essentially the conversation was revolving around the fact, what is wrong with you? And we had an incredible conversation. I was able to remain codified, give her the information she needed, and to explain how in under the system, how can I not be crazy? And I think after explaining that to her, she literally kind of, some things maybe demystified for her. We spoke for over an hour. She felt maybe as if it was therapy for her as well. Anyway, this non-white female, the psychologist, gave me a recommendation because she says I suffer from anxiety, which of course, as a black male in the system of racism, white supremacy, how can you not suffer from anxiety? She gave me my diagnosis and I took it to the state office because the state has to, they give you the money. The state gives you the money. When I got to the office, of course, there was a white social worker who sat me down and was rather skeptical about my disability. She spoke with me for about 20 minutes and I explained to her the many instances in the past. I mean, just it's so easy for all of us victims to generally articulate, hey, look, man, I'm being terrorized, like event after event after event. And I explained to her essentially white terror. And while I did not use those words, her very apologetic attitude, but still kind of incredulous, she asked me to send her my documentation from the psychologist. The psychologist sent over the documentation, and I was recently approved for funding to take this class, which would normally cost a few thousand dollars, but will help me to further in my business. I just want to say that to the other non-white victims listening, just that to not take mental health lightly. Being a victim, we know in many cases, Colin Ferguson, we got Chris Dorner. I mean, there's many cases where sometimes, specifically black men and black women, we can't take it anymore. And I find myself generally once every 6 to 12 months having thoughts of taking compensatory action myself. And so I have a very difficult time kind of restraining that feeling. And when I articulated that, I kind of hinted at that with the psychologist, the non-white female, she definitely could understand what I meant, just how the system drives us crazy. But I just wanted to share my experience with the other callers out there. Also, take advantage of any state programs that may be out there that are available to people who have disabilities. Because if whether you realize it or not, being a victim of racism is not just a quote unquote disability. It's an actual disability defined by the people who practice racism, and will drive, and it's driving Black people around the world to literal insanity. So just putting that out there for people who may want to think that they don't qualify for disability based on that fact. These people must remember that they have put us under this condition. I'll take my call offline. Thank you.
But just real briefly, when she said in the therapy session, when it was asked, what's wrong with you? How did you answer?
The question was not directly asked, what's wrong with you? But she asked, why are you here? And I said, I'm here because I suffer from extreme anxiety, specifically brought to me by people who practice racism. And then it just like the cat just like exploded. She almost like physically her body sunk down into the chair, and she was like, oh, man. Now, maybe that's because she hears that often, but that was just my response to her.
Very, very fascinating. Other folks on the line, and thank you for sharing, because I think that's important too, just the serious of this when we say racism. We say racism, white supremacy is war, just the seriousness of it, and how it impacts your mental health, and to the intense and extreme nature of the impact, adverse impact that it has on your well-being. I think that's important, because I am sure you are not the only one in that boat. And in fact, a lot of black people end up being, a lot of victims of racism, period, end up being self-destructive without the component of, I'm going to try to do harm to racists while I'm being harmful to myself as well. We just end up engaging in a lot of self-destructive behaviors as a result of our poor mental health. So definitely, thank you. And I think just that further reminds us the seriousness of this, and we should reflect that seriousness in our behavior as much as possible at all times. Some of the other folks that dialed in that we have not heard from, if you have commentary, if you have questions or your own situation, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. Thank you. Workplace racism. Just real quick, I work at this hotel. My general manager is Caucasian. The guy who trained me is Asian. The Asian male, Thai or some kind of Laos or something like that. It's not a Chinese or a Japanese. And the lady has a relationship with his cousin. So their children are Asian and Caucasian. And then there's us. So the majority of the staff is black now, and one Spanish-speaking housekeeper is permanent, and she's been there the longest, maybe 13 to 16 years. So we're basically trained coming in not to like her. She's the one that's going to tell on you. And if you do this, you know, they give you all the amenities. You can wash your clothes here if you'd like, but don't let the housekeeper find out because she'll call corporate and that kind of thing. Or we're not supposed to be related working there the way her and the Asian guy are related by either marriage or baby parent. You know, I think she has two kids with him or something, the Asian guy. So we're not supposed to have that kind of union going on. But if she'll say something, oh, well, I don't care if you you work here with your relative, just don't tell anybody else because we have a lot of haters here and just that kind of thing. So I'm always complaining about the cleanliness in the hotel. So I told the district manager, because sometimes she'll ask me what's going on at the hotel. So it's just like, well, it's a little messy. And then sometimes they'll do reviews and you'll see the reviews. And it states, you know, whatever their complaint is. And a lot of it is housekeeping and the customer service agents are rude, and we don't have coffee. Just a lot of little things we don't have that we say we should have. So we have a supposedly, I think the district, we're supposed to have an audit. So all of a sudden, I've been there almost 3 months. It's never been clean except for whatever I maintain. Now all of a sudden it's spotless because she thought it was going to be an audit. It wasn't an audit. It was just to get that place together. So she gets our Caucasian manager, she's not very friendly with blacks. She's very rude with the blacks. There's one lady on a leave of absence because she's so verbally disrespectful. She asked her doctor to give her a note so she can be on leave of absence, get paid medical leave of absence, because she feels if she's going to beat up our Caucasian manager. Now, this lady's still on leave. So she terrorizes everybody black. I don't give her that action. So she picks at me just a little with maybe some of the things that I do or don't do. So I notice she picks at me and picks at me and picks at me, but I deal with her a particular way. So she's not getting under my skin. I just, okay, that's fine. Okay, that's fine. And, you know, I try to do the best I can. So they're so disrespectful. So the Asian guy, I'm relieving him. He's like, oh, my God. Oh, this, that, and the other. This guy cursed me out and called the police. They call me all these names, and someone's going to make me bleed. And so I'm like, oh, my God, this poor thing. And so the next morning, black people are in the lobby waiting on the manager. Where's that manager at? I was like, well, she gets here at 7:30, so it's at 8 o'clock almost. And she's like, oh, I can't wait for 7:30. I'm gonna give that girl a piece of my mind. And do you know that Asian guy cussed me out and called me all those names and this. And she was like, well, if you want to be a woman so bad, I'll make you bleed. So they're going back and forth. So he's literally arguing with the guest. So eventually, I just told the lady, I was like, look, just give me 2 minutes so I can leave, and then y'all can do whatever y'all going to do. I just don't want to stay any longer. It's already after almost 9 o'clock. So she did. So I left. I don't know what happened, but apparently they got kicked out. So Tuesday, there's a family there because sometimes you can stay there. Say if my house is getting renovated or I had a fire, they'll pay for me to stay at this hotel. So that's what they do with some family. There's two sets of family, 5 kids all together. Or 5 children all together, 2 separate rooms. If people are complaining about them because they're black children. So they're complaining, oh, they're making too much noise. Oh, it's this, is that, is that, that. So something happened, something very minute in the room. Maybe the housekeeping came in and it was something very minute that they saw that maybe the kids could have did to the room. It wasn't anything bad, very small. So now it's like, well, I need your credit card for incidentals. I need your credit card number. Now, a company is paying for the black family's rooms. And then he's like, I'm not giving you my credit card information. Oh, well, you're not getting back in the room. And shut the keys off and wouldn't let him back in the room. So he's like, well, hold on a second. You know, my stuff is in there. I've been in there. Well, no, you can't get this key. No, you guys are ratchet, and you're just ghetto, and you can't stay here, and you guys just can just leave, and your kids are hella bad, and just really disrespecting these people. So then she chimes in, the manager, chimes in, oh, you guys are going to have to get out. You can't even stay here. And he's like, well, wait a minute. My stuff is inside of the room. Can I get? No, you can't get that until you give us your credit card information. So eventually they called the police, and the police said, well, hey, you got to give them their stuff. You can't hold their stuff hostage. And then he's going to tell the lady, you've been acting racist ever since Trump got in office. And so she's looking and called the guy, the Asian guy, all kind of fags and all this stuff, and because he's gay and he really plays the role. It's just ridiculous. And so now they kicked them out. So it seems like every black family within the past 2 weeks has gotten ejected out of the hotel. And I just noticed that. So I just wanted to comment on that, because I noticed, especially since around this time, they're really, really lashing out on us. Not like they're not terrorizing others, but I just noticed they're doing undercut things to make our lives complicated. So that's all I wanted to share this time. And I'll mute my line. And thank you for taking my call.
Man, you know, you talked about the hotel environment where you're working at now previously. And it just, I don't know in terms of comparison, but it just sounds like a very dangerous, toxic place. I think when you were talking before, one of the folks there was intoxicated and being confrontational with you, and you were saying before that you didn't feel safe. Like, it just seems like a very, very dangerous environment. I would really not take that seriously, and I mean, I would, you know, really make sure that, you know, you have some time to kind of get your mind correct, as long as you, you know, are going to work there, to kind of get your mind correct, because it seems like that's a place, I mean, talk about alert, like you would need to be alert for many, many things in that environment, because it just seems like such a anything goes type of situation.
You're correct.
Man, don't lax in your vigilance. Take that seriously, man. Other folks, did you all have questions or your own situations that you want to talk to address other folks as well? Other folks that we haven't heard from have either questions about any of the situations that have been laid out so far, or have your own situation that you wanted to share with us? Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. Greetings to us, the hosts, the listeners, and callers. My first observation was I was picking up the mail. I think it was like maybe Monday or Tuesday morning. And the white guy, like it was a, like it's a radio that you have in the area. And it was talking about George Zimmerman in this recent incident he had at that restaurant. And this guy said, well, because they're starting to connect it with Donald Trump, like racism hadn't already been in existence. You know, since Donald Trump got elected, you know, it looks like people want to just show out and everything. And George Zimmerman is just acting wild. He didn't say racism or anything related to race, but I know what he meant. And there was another incident where the white male that's going to retire, the white man, I noticed there was a hat, and the irony to this is that there's a female from Mexico that's sit across from him, and you know, I chat with her every day or whatever, and so I walk over there and I say, this hat looks different. So I walk over to the hat and I look at it, and it says "Make America Great Again." So, you know, this dude had on the Donald Trump hat. I think that's what. Yeah, "Make America Great Again." So, this was on Monday, and he says, "Yeah, my grandson wears this hat, and I got him one, and my other grandson one, and usually has a Florida Gators hat, but particularly some reason he wore that. Now, I think he wore that to get a reaction out of somebody. But I didn't give him that. But I expect that he would do something like that. And there was another person that wore this hat, too. It was a blue one. Like, they got different ones. It was like a white and blue hat. And the black male was at the traffic front counter. And the guy had on a Make America Great Again hat. Like, these hats been popping up. Like, that one was before the election, and this one was after it. So, you know, I guess he was trying to wear it to kind of throw it in people's face or just to be, I guess, kind of bragging and boastful about it. And there was another incident, I think it could have been racism, where this the same white guy, he's been going around saying that, you know, because he says rat traps, because, you know, we've been having a rat, you know, rodent issue for some years, and it's kind of died down for a while. And, like, he would be setting traps in the ceiling, and, you know, it's a whole bunch of women, whole bunch of females up in the first floor. So I guess he's been going around saying that, oh, you know, whenever I retire, you know, I'm going to give the job to me. He was saying my name. So, you know, one white supervisor, she came up to me. She says, well, hey, you know, I'm here now. I said, I'm going to cut you off right now. And I'm not going to be doing that. You know, I didn't take a rude tone. I kind of had a smirk. I just said, hey, you know, I'm not going to be doing that. And then she said in another conversation talking about, oh, well, you know, what are we going to do? What are the women going to do? You know, I'm going to have to demote you from being a man. I said, so what's the criteria for me to be a man? Why does it have to do with cleaning up rat feces or something like that? I said, so, you know, I asked a couple of questions, and she just pretty much just went back to doing her work. And then was saying, you know, we're going to have a conversation with, you know, my old supervisor, because I used to work under him. And she tried to do it again, like in front of people. And I think she was trying to get a reaction in, because he was sitting around in the office area. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'm not going to do it. So non-white female tried to jump in it, you know, because she asked me, oh, well, you're not mad at me. And I said, of course not. You know, I just walked away, and then she started laughing. So I guess she didn't think I was going to respond that way. You know, I guess he probably assumed that I was going to want to do that. But that's just pretty much disgusting. So, yeah, I didn't want to have anything to do with cleaning up, you know, rat droppings and setting rat traps and stuff. That's something he did. And that's all I can think of for now. Thank you.
Appreciate that. I am sure, I didn't mention it, but certainly folks who have had any sort of experiences the last week or 10 days since the election with how folks have been responding and talking about Trump, the protests, or all of the fallout with all of that, certainly dial in if you have, or if you have codified some things in terms of what to say, what to do. I just, you know, really, really insist. That sort of thing, like you were talking about the guy's coming in, he's got his hat on, the Make America Great Again or whatever else. And you said it felt like the type of thing to bait someone. Just keep, remember that, that frequently, racists, that's what they want to do. They want to get us, you know, to get upset, get your blood pressure up, compromising your mental health, to get you all riled up over something like that. Just remember, we want to be professional soldiers. And the same type of thing about the rat trap, when they're like, you know, that's going to be your job, you know. Now you can take that over when he leaves. And you're like, well, no, I don't think, you know, I'm going to do this. And she's like, what? You're not going to protect all of these women here? You know, what type of man are you? Maybe you're not even a man. The same type of thing, you know, where they can just throw some insults in. It's always a plus when you can just stay in the question, like, well, wait a minute, what's that criterion for manhood? Oh, okay, let's just go back to work. Like, I don't want to even answer these questions. Like, I'm done playing. Let's just go back and, you know, do some work here. That's the way that we want to approach things. Don't take it personal. Don't be surprised. Just process, listen to what is said. And if anything, you can ask questions about what they have presented. And sometimes all you can do is ask one question and that will shut everything down and folks will get back to where they need to be, what we need to be doing. If folks have questions or your own observations, feel free. The number again, 641-715-3640. And the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Any folks that we have not heard from who had commentary, questions you would like to share?
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Greetings, everybody. This is 1842, and I really wanted to talk about one thing that I've been trying. I guess one could call it a social experiment, because I was far more confused and far less codified, let's say, in the beginning of the year. And so I had a totally different energy about me in my workplace, far more bubbly, all of this other kind of stuff. And I don't want to do that. So I've been in the process of backing away from that and setting boundaries and becoming codified. And I've been noticing, of course, whites' backlash to that, or like they're looking at me with like a raised eyebrow. And like, well, what's up with her, you know? And so I've been having to mitigate that and kind of blur the line so it's not as such of a stark contrast. And so what I've been doing to help transition is to still have moments where that aspect comes out, but it's completely work-related. For instance, I have, I'm a slash event planner, so I'm throwing a big party and I'm having tastings. So all up until now, I've been very about, you know, my work, very serious, very, like having a lot of self-respect, codified, professional, like that, you know. And so, but when the event comes and that's like a little tasting, I'm like, oh, well, you know, yes, and I love glitter and yes, and the food is fabulous and, you know, all of that. So that, you know, they stop looking at me like, well, maybe she's unhappy here. She hates her job, you know, all of that, because I can tell that's where they're going with it. But I needed to, like I said, kind of blur the lines a little bit. And so I've had a few things that I've done like that. But there's also a one other thing that I've done that is a little bit more social experiment-y. Sorry, I had to step away for a second. But I have taken upon my own white showcasing. There's a female who really, really enjoys talking to me. And the new property manager, I can tell, has been looking at me like, well, what's her deal? And me talking, you know, like she doesn't seem really, you know, bubbly and all this other kind of stuff. Well, this woman comes in and she's like, oh, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, blah, 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 blah. Oh, yeah, da, 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 da. And so, and she's white. So what I did is I used her so that they don't think that I don't like white people. I'm just really quiet, you know, because I don't know him, the new property manager, and I'm at work. So I have far less to talk about. But here, this woman who's like obviously white, and I appear to really like talk with her. And I watched him watch me interact with her today, the new property manager. And it's important because I'm contracted. So at any moment, they could be like, you know what, we don't like her. Let's just move her, move along. Let's get someone new. As a matter of fact, let's get a virtual one, you know, that whole shebang. But I found it to be really effective. So those two things are new strategies that I've employed recently that have allowed me to make the transition from being less codified in my workspace to more codified, being strictly about my business, but then having moments where when it's about my business, I'm really excited and I'm all about it. And then I go right back to being professional and low key and then showcasing a white person. And I didn't even, you know, when I saw, I was like, you know what? That's what I'm going to do. And so, you know, I remained objective about it and just like watched and was like, wow. And I mean, he really came out the office and he was just participating and watching because he had never really seen me interact with white people like that before. So I, you know, I'm out here in Virginia, Trump just won. you know, all this other kind of stuff. So they're just like, you know, what's up with this, you know, black female? And he saw that and he immediately changed his energy towards me and the way he's even looking at me, like he's less glitchy and smiling and stuff. And I was like, okay, you have a good one. Yeah, sure, the whole thing, which works because I don't want to do it every day with people in my office. But this female who I see like once every 2 to 3 weeks, whatever, I'll showcase her. I know that may not sound, you know, like whatever, but I don't care. It worked. And so, yeah, that's pretty much what I have to contribute for this workplace racism. Thank you.
How have you been able to determine the effectiveness of that, this strategy of showcasing, right, like with this chatty white woman?
I'll be able to see more next week. I'll be the only one in the office tomorrow. But the way that it happened, she comes in, she manages our foliage in our offices. And when she came in, like he's the new property manager because he's new. So that's really who I'm referring to. He has, like, he does not know me whatsoever. And so he's like, what is she even doing here? And he has heard me interact with her a few times, but he must have been busy. This particular time, he's on his way out of the office, and she is talking about, before doing this, I was in mental health. She has, like, an autistic daughter. So that's something that she's always talking to me about, medication, suggestions, like, therapies, like, all this other kind of stuff. The old property manager was very much aware of, you know, all these little different relationships that I had developed in this setting. So anyway, on his way out, he's like watching her be really, really friendly and like excited and talking about so many things like that has nothing to do with like the plants, her house, her holiday plans, like all this other kind of stuff. Now, typically, had it been the other property manager, I would have just been like, But this time, I can't, to be honest, tell you if it's effective or not, but I can tell you that his demeanor and the way that he interacted with me upon walking outside of the office, his energy changed and he felt less tense. I could just see that in his face, his facial expressions, the way he walked out. Like he just seemed like, oh, okay, she likes white people. Like that's what it felt like. I could be totally incorrect, but that's what I felt. And I attribute that to my showcasing this white woman, although perhaps I'm not able to showcase anyone because I'm black and powerless, but I use that. I wanted her to be someone so that other white people could say, oh, well, it's not like she doesn't like any white people. She talks to this one. It would, you know, whether it's effective or not, I'll let you guys know next time we talk.
Awesome. Awesome. Strategic. I like that as well. The idea of strategically employing the more chipper, I think you said bubbly, personality, and then immediately, once that's done, right back to work, and that is all done. So no one can say that they never saw you smile or anything. And then making sure when that brief experience of bubbliness is on display that it is also work-related. I think that's great as well. You'll have to let us know how that moves moving forward. Other folks that we have not heard from. Any folks that we've not heard from, if you have questions or your own experiences, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, this is Kendra. I'm a first-time caller. I have a workplace observation similar to the caller, the gentleman caller a few callers ago. There's a gentleman who retired from my company after 25 years of service. He comes from a very, very, very wealthy background. Anyway, his father's health is deteriorating. So he's taking it upon himself to be there for his dad. The last 2 weeks of his last day at work, he started to drive his luxury vehicle, a Mercedes-Benz, which is different than the vehicle he was driving prior. What I noticed was the Trump Make America Great Again sticker prominently displayed on his rear window. This is a gentleman that has had countless conversations with me about the stock market. He knows that I invest in the stock market, and he's given me a lot of tips. This is a gentleman that has always been very friendly with me. So another non-white male noticed the bumper sticker and came up to me. This guy is a little bit less confused. He only dates white women, but he's still a little bit less confused. I can talk to him about racism, white supremacy, and he's the only one at work who I would talk to. Yes, he's the only one I would talk to about those issues. And more or less, he's the one who always approaches me. So we have our conversations always outside of work. I codified it where we only talk about racism, white supremacy outside of work. There was a time where he would talk to me about it at work and in front of, you know, other non-white people, and I had to kind of pull him aside and kind of tell him what my personal code is. But he was very shocked to see this, and he's like, how is this gentleman who's been giving you stock tips, who always comes and hugs you and all that, how is he all of a sudden prominently displaying his Make America Great Again bumper sticker? So we kind of just chuckled about it, and it was just a lesson, I think, for him, just to kind of better understand racism, white supremacy, and how somebody who is classified as white could, you know, be very nice towards you, share stock tips, give you hugs, whatever, and, you know, still display their racism, white supremacy. So that's all I had. Thank you.
First time caller, spectacular. I'm glad you could dial in. I think there might have been some issues for earlier attempts to call into the program. I'm glad it worked out today. Salute as well. It seems like we have at least a significant number of listeners who they have made it a part of their code in some way, shape, or form to try to reach out to other black people on the job. That's great. Glad we have folks willing to do that and to codify how they're going to do it, to switch it up and say, if we're going to talk about racism, we will do that outside of work hours. I think that is a great adjustment, although I would still advise caution, but certainly that's an improvement in terms of codifying behavior. And that's spectacular that he was able to observe that your black coworker, to see that this white guy who is normally, you know, he loves the colors, he comes in and hugs everybody every day, and you know, it's all smiles and giggles, but still got his Make America Great, still went in and voted for Trump. Like, we get very, very confused about that frequently. And even thinking that some of these people, if he had come in and been upset about Trump, some of us might have thought, hey, that Ted is awesome. He was so upset about Donald Trump, and he was more fired up about it than I was. I mean, no way he's a racist. There'll be a lot of, has been, will probably be a lot more of that as this evolves. But I think a lot of times we get very confused about that. And that is, wow, for that to happen on the job with a coworker, that is outstanding that you were able to point that out. And, you know, hopefully that'll be a lesson that can kind of stick with him as it proceeds. Was it anything specific that prompted you to motive or to adjust your code to only talking about racism with this black coworker outside of work hours?
Yes, actually, he's classified in the system as Hispanic. He's actually from the Dominican Republic, but he will let you know that he is a non-white person. He considers himself a black person. But if you were to see him, you would definitely know that he is a quote-unquote Hispanic origin. But yes, what actually made me kind of approach him and said, hey, we have to have this code, was he was just very boisterous about his displeasure of racism, white supremacy at the workplace. I work for one of the biggest alcohol beer distributors in the United States. And so our company is pretty huge, and he works in the warehouse. He's part of the management team. But even though he's part of the management team, he makes it very known where he stands with racism, white supremacy, and to the point, he was very uncodified. I mean, I taught him a lot, exposed him to The Cows, Pam's book, Trojan Horse. So he's learning as he's going. But yes, just the boisterousness, just him being so willing to talk so openly to other non-white people about racism just kind of made me very nervous in the environment that we worked in. So I just kind of told, he always knew that I had certain codes, but that code was something that I never really shared with him because we were among other non-white people, black or Hispanic people. And so, but as I kind of started also gaining a better understanding of how racism and white supremacy work, I had to kind of tell him, hey, you know, we have to kind of stop this. And he was very much in support of it. So we hang out outside of work and we will talk about racism, white supremacy at work. Even though today he did scream something out in front of other coworkers. So, you know, he's still learning. But that was why. He's just willingness to just let his feelings be known. He's very frustrated with racism, white supremacy, and the work environment. So and he just is trying to kind of figure out a way to deal with it. So, yeah.
Wow. Riveting anecdote from the workplace. I would certainly encourage that because you definitely do not want to be that to be this, because we've heard a lot of those. I think Roz started off earlier and saying that he was talking with a black coworker and some, you know, little racist came around the corner and they're listening and got their alert all up high to be eavesdropping on our conversations. It only takes one experience like that for the wrong person to come in, white and or non-white, to come in and overhear something and then decide that they're going to go and gossip and tell this person and that person. So definitely, even if you do decide that, you know, you're going to reach out and try to talk to other non-white people on your job, I think after hours or away from the physical building where you actually work at or wherever the area is where you work, I think that's a great suggestion to employ as well.
And Gus, the logic that you just used is exactly what I told him, precisely that. You don't know who's listening. We just cannot assume that just because, you know, another non-white person is, you know, around us, that that person is in agreement with what we're talking about. So I had to just kind of let him know that that's my stance. So, and like I said, he understood. And I don't talk to anyone else at work about racism, white supremacy. He's basically the only person. And I was really, like I said, shocked at how open he was and willing to talk about racism, white supremacy, seeing that he only dates white women. So, yeah, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, I meant to say that. You said that first. For sure, no non-white person, they could not, for me, be considered as being less confused if they, like, exclusively and serially, quote-unquote, date white women. Man, oh, man, you have lost your less confused card for Gus T. But I think Trojan Pam, I think she might co-sign with Gus T in saying, you cannot lay down with a white person at night and then get up and fight racism. It just does not compute at all. RacismWS.com, Trojan Horse Publications. Outstanding first time call. Did you have?
Heard?
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think sister that was just speaking, I think that she's done some brilliant work there, but I agree with you as far as your premise just now. Also, to the black female who was talking about how she changed her code to show more interest in work-related situations that go positively, and then she goes back to her code of, like, you know, shutting stuff down and just getting back to business. I just was thinking about that, and that's something that I've employed, and it does work. What I find is because white people are narcissistic, I think that's one of the strongest characteristics of white supremacy, that they're narcissistic, whether it's about getting attention or just having everything center around them, that if you do feign heightened interest in work-related things, that can diffuse them looking at you in a more racist manner in regards to how they judge how you function in your character on the job. And I was thinking about it. This is something that I've employed before, but I never consciously thought about it. It was just something that I always employed because I knew that it worked as far as it being, for me at least, a path of least resistance to dealing with these criminals. But I just wanted to reiterate that. So I'm looking forward to hearing what her experiences are next week, as far as when she chimes in next week to let us know what her experiences with this particular white male boss of hers, because it's something that I do find that it does work. I don't employ it all the time. It depends on who I'm dealing with and how closely I have to interact with that person. But I when it's necessary, matter of fact, the same terroristic supervisor, I employ that with her because I know that that's the way her psychotic mind functions, and it works brilliantly for me. So definitely, I totally can see her making much more headway in that type of codification. So that's just something I wanted to chime in with. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I especially appreciate the making sure this momentary eruption of bubbliness is related to something on the job, not just, you know, some random moment that we're going to stop and cackle for a few minutes and then get back on the job.
Yeah, strictly work only. That's it. After that, it's like back to the grindstone. Bye. Mm-hmm. So, yep, you're absolutely correct.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I wanted to add in as well, if other folks, if you have questions, any of the folks that are listening, if you have questions for the other callers, anything that you've heard, right, feel free. And certainly, if folks, if you need to email in, do that as well, untiljustice@gmail.com. One listener, she did share earlier today, we are, I guess, time got away from me, and so we are right on the doorstep to one of the big holidays with quote-unquote Thanksgiving coming up a week from today, and then Christmas being roughly a month from now or so. So all of the holiday madness has kicked in on the job. We had one of our listeners today, they said they had some sort of Thanksgiving festivity on their job today, and I guess it was kind of a potluck type of thing where people were encouraged or strongly advised to cook a dish or buy something and bring it in, and then we're gonna all sit around and, you know, eat a bunch of food and talk gossip about everybody that has worked here or been fired over the past calendar year. And she said that she resolutely declined. She said that she was not going to participate. She did not cook anything. She didn't bring anything. She said that she knew one person. She has one comrade on the job, and that one person cooked something. So she ate a little bit of what that one person made, and then she ignored everything else that everyone brought and just made it clear that she was not going to participate in any of the madness. So certainly, if you have your code about how you deal with holiday madness on the job, the parties, and I mean, even that is codified because sometimes they have parties that are during work hours that might even be required. Your attendance might be required. And then sometimes they have to have the after hours affairs. Sometimes those are volunteer. Sometimes those are mandatory. So just whatever, however you deal with those festivities, this is the time to prepare because, yeah, we're going to be people, I'm sure, will be having to deal with that for about the next 45 days or so. Folks, anything they want to share on that specifically or questions, comments about what we've discussed thus far?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Real quick, the young lady that just spoke up in reference to having somebody that talks to her about the stock market and getting tips, I actually have a gentleman that I did a loan for about 5 or 6 years ago, and he's taken a notice because I'm interested in stocks and finances and stuff like that. And whenever I want to kind of get a good, you know, just a gist of where the market is going, and I actually thought about Pam, which he said last week, and I said, well, Pam had mentioned that this country is like really in bad shape. And so I reached out to him on Monday, suspected racist. He's just extremely refined in the words that he uses. And so I asked him, I said, well, you know, what did you think about the presidency and stuff like that? And I'm very extremely codified because a lot of times with these people, they don't think that I suspect them of being racist, which is really an advantage to me. And so he says that, you know, the market is going to do this and that. And then he referred me over to something. And you guys, if you have time later, you can look at it, but it's called usdebtclock.org. And he says, if you just look at that and look at how bad this situation is, And this is just goes to, like Gus talks about, the brilliance of people that we all have. Pam said that this situation that the U.S. is in, specifically this part of the world, was bad. This guy told me that he thinks in 2020, if something doesn't happen with federal spending, that the U.S. is going to end up like Greece. And this guy is not dumb at all. He's made predictions on interest rates, and they've always been correct. And so that was just one thing I just wanted to just share. I just heard her say that about having somebody else involved in stocks, and I have a gentleman that's very, very similar as well. And so we have usdebtclock.org, and it'll really show you the numbers of how bad this country is. And the reason why I mention that is because on all of our jobs, you know, when this country gets messed up and the U.S. gets messed up in money, you know, if white people want to be responsible for the good, they need to be responsible for the bad. And all that mess has been caused by people that are not black. This is not black people's fault or any other non-white people. This whole mess that they created has been caused by white people. And that's it. Thanks, girl.
Posted on our Facebook page, the website he just mentioned, usdebtclock.org, on the Facebook page for the cows.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I wanted to speak to when you were talking about the code for the holidays. Also, I wanted to chime in on U.S. Debt Clock. I've been up on that for a number of years, and we talk about the debt situation and the coming economic collapse quite regularly on Tando Radio, and we've been predicting that it's going to happen a lot earlier than 2020. But if that does, if that ends up being the case, that's good because it gives people more time to prepare. So I definitely understand and agree with that. Whoever that white person that deals with stocks, with the stock market, was saying, it's definitely coming. I just think it's going to happen sooner than 2020. But to speak on the code in regard to holidays, last year on the same job, when they had the Christmas party, it was potentially mandatory. And I ended up going with my wife. We went very late, and we made a point to only stay for an hour, did not drink anything, do not dance with white terrorists, do not do anything, just, you know, mix and mingle, be courteous and cordial. And then we got up out of Dodge, did not mess around. When it comes to food, I don't do it. I don't touch anybody's food. If I know the person and they're black, and I know that person well, and I like the previous caller, then I would actually partake of something that that specific person made. I try to get at those things early as possible, because I find that once you have the food laid out, sometimes it ends up in areas where people can still do things to the food. So even if I'm eating from someone who I know, then I will try and get to their food as early as possible, so that there's no way that food can be left unattended for some white psychotic bum to go put something in it or do something to it. So that's definitely a code. Other than that, I don't touch anything from anyone. I don't even care if they came in there and it was, you know, in a sealed container and they open it up on the job. If they're white, I'm not touching anything that they have to provide whatsoever. And basically, if I don't know you, I'm not touching anything that you prepared whatsoever. If I know you and we have that kind of relationship, then that's fine. Outside of that, my whole thing is I don't partake of those things. I'm not going to cook anything to bring to the job for anyone. I'm not partaking in anything of that nature. Thank you, and I'll mute my line.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
This is 1842 again, and I wanted to speak on the so-called holiday codification. I'm very selective about who I choose to tell the truth to and who I choose to lie to, about whether or not I'll participate or whatever, just because sometimes I it's just easier and I don't feel like going into it. So I'll just like, and make people move out the way. But I'm making it part of my codification to definitely tell the truth to non-white people, specifically black people, about certain things. And even though I know that there will more than likely be a backlash and they more than likely won't like me, and that's not necessarily new, but it's, you know, it can be uncomfortable. And not always at the job or like while it's at the job, but for instance, I carpool because I commute. I live in Virginia. I work in D.C. And, you know, I spend about an hour and a half with this one non-white black female who took a liking to me, and then we decided to ride in together. And it got a little painful because she's constantly talking about Thanksgiving and Christmas, like just constant. And, you know, my avoidance of it and trying to just, you know, whatever, placate her did not work well. And so then finally I was like, okay, well, look, to be honest with you, I don't do holidays. I don't do them at all. I appreciate the time away from my job to do things that I need to do, but I'm not into it. And I said, I cook my food all the time, so it's not like eating a home-cooked meal is something that is, like, you know, novel to me. And I explained a little bit more, and then she kind of adjusted. And I didn't hope, prayerfully, she didn't adjust just because she felt that, like, I came with a strong opinion, but maybe she herself might have felt like she didn't have to be so, you know, on the holiday as, like, she was trying to push it on me. And there's a few other, you know, like, do you have plans for the holidays? And I just let them know, look, that's not really like my thing. I think, you know, as non-white black people, victims of racism and white supremacy, we got bigger things to worry about, and we can be, you know, spend our money better. And, you know, I'll say like certain things like that. And I say, you know, I just, like I said, appreciate the time away from work. I love to be around my family. That's fantastic. But that's pretty much it. I don't participate in Black Friday, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that's only because, and the only reason I'm doing it is because oftentimes I feel like non-white people are limited in our interactions with other non-white people who have differing opinions that could be helpful. So if I'm silent with, you know, other non-white victims of racism and white supremacy, then I kind of prevent them from having that opportunity to think differently about something, or to see what it might look like when someone thinks differently about something, or that it's okay to feel differently about something. And so that's my only reason for doing it. Now, is it working? So far, sure. Like, I still rode with the woman. She didn't say that, you know, we weren't going to go, you know, commute together. Although I think, well, it doesn't matter. And then, you know, with other people, they might have, like, a reaction at first. But I think that that's normal anytime something new is presented to someone. If it works, then I'll note that. If it doesn't, I'll note that too. But, you know, I do want to be able to be honest with non-white people. I think that's instrumental in creating a different reality for ourselves and replacing the system of racism and supremacy with a system of justice. Got to get as many people at least thinking differently, even if we're not agreeing with everything the same way. But with all the white people, whatever, I'm just like, time with the family, move it along, get away from me. I don't care. I'm not really trying to talk to you. In terms of the party, I throw a really, really big party. That's part of my job, but that's just part of my job. So it's neither here nor there. It just is what it is. Thank you.
Wow. Yeah, I would definitely, any of the holiday nonsense, I think the one thing that I really appreciate about the anecdote, 1842, just shared, I think it's really important for black people, not just in the workplace, but, you know, wherever, where as we on this journey of trying to solve this problem, becoming less confused, black victims of white supremacy who are, maybe they're still into empire, maybe they are, you know, just excited, having difficulty sleeping tonight, trying to get into work tomorrow to talk about scandal. And, you know, they're just overjoyed about Thanksgiving coming up next week and Christmas and whatever else. You know, they're not codified. I think it is important, maybe crucial, that an aspect of counter-racism be that we not, in our efforts to kind of shed some of the non-constructive behaviors, that that does not become a cause of conflict between non-white people who are quote-unquote a little bit less confused and the non-white people who are a little bit more confused, allegedly, and not codified. Like, that shouldn't become cause for conflict. Like, just because you're, you know, wearing candy canes and a Santa hat and doing the gifts and all of that, if we can keep that from being a reason that we have conflict or don't speak, like, we can still be courteous and all that, and we can even be courteous. Hey, I don't, you know, do all the Christmas stuff, but, you know, right on. Still going to speak to you. We're still going to be cordial. We're still going to be courteous, and I'll still help you in something constructive, if need be, on the job. I think that's really important, and you said you all are still commuting, at least for this week, and staying constructive. I think that's great. That's I think Dr. Welsing would be really proud about that as well, making sure that we can keep that network, keep those bonds with other Black people, potential allies, and trying to get these problems taken care of. Other folks have commentary, questions they want to share? If we nabbed everyone, number again. Few things. We had someone wrote in. I guess I'll read their email first. A few things that you should not do on the job. Have your personal packages delivered to your workplace. It's a trap. Never eat the food white people cook. Usually the most sickest white person with a cold, flu, etc. is the one who loves to cook. Wear your headphones if they are allowed, but not to the point where you are not aware. They do like to sneak up on you, as someone mentioned in a past broadcast. Do have my own workplace racism history. It's very long and somewhat complicated to explain, but I will dial in soon. Thank you kindly for sharing. Just going to say, with regard to non-white coworkers, at least that's been my experience, I think a lot of times, the anti-blackness, right, where it will not take very much for things to get really bad with other non-white people. You don't have to like everybody. I'm, you know, not on that at all. It's not about liking. You don't have to be homies, best friends, anything like that. But I think at minimum, just Black people that you work with, if you can at least keep things where you all speak, where you're cordial, you'll help them out if they need it, that sort of thing. If you can at least keep things there, I think that's great. That can be super helpful, and they might be some folks that can at least pass you some information when they hear some things that are happening, some information that'll be helpful so you know about things that are happening on the job and not be caught off guard or surprised. I think that would be great, just as much as possible, if we can try to keep lines of communication open, as they say, open and cordial with other Black people that we work with. Any other commentary specifically about holiday stuff? I do think it's important to kind of touch on that, as it's going to be coming up. Holiday stuff, any of the other incidents that folks have touched on throughout the day, anything else folks want to make sure they touch on before we close out today?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I wanted to touch on the headphones comment, because I think that's extremely important. I travel quite far from home to work, so I usually read, and I'll either listen to a podcast, or I might listen to music that will just shift my vibration if I'm need to elevate it at any point during the day. And one thing that I do is, if I am listening to music, I never get, like, I'm an artist. I used to produce and rap and all this stuff way back in the days. Now I'm a writer, and, but when I was actively making music, I know that I listened to music a lot different then than I do now. And back then, I used to get really wrapped up into what I was listening to the point where you can easily tune out everything around you and not have battlefield awareness. Whereas now, when I'm listening to music, I never get wrapped up in it to that level unless I'm home and I'm in a safe environment, quote unquote. I put that in quotes because I don't think anywhere safe in the system of white supremacy, but the safest environment is home, you know, and you're surrounded by your family and people who care about you, rather than in a public space where white people can try anything. So if I am in a public space or at work, I usually will, and at times I'll actually turn the music off but leave my headphones in, so that if there are white people around me, they might think I'm listening to music, but I can hear them. So if they say anything, that I need to be aware of, or they, you know, or anything of that nature, I'm actually picking up on it and they're not consciously aware that I am. So that is something that's a part of my code now that I'm older and I'm a lot more, a lot less confused, I would say, in regards to my understanding of the predatory nature of white people. So that's something I wanted to throw out there too. Just be careful. I remember there was an incident of a black male who was shot and killed. This was, I think, earlier this year or sometime last year. I can't remember because so many of our people get killed. It's just crazy at this point. But anyway, he was shot and killed. And the officer said that he had gotten into a scuffle with the guy and the guy had taken off and he had shot him in the back. And when everything came to, you know, a complete understanding of what happened in the investigation, what happened was the guy was actually shot in the back because he was wearing headphones. And when the police officer was telling him to stop, he couldn't hear him. So he, you know, he was walking. So he just kept walking. And the guy gunned him down like an animal from behind, and he stole his headphones. So when they found the body, there was no headphones on the body. So they just thought that this officer's story was authentic. And it so happened that there was a non-white black person who actually took a photograph of the body, and it showed the headphones before the officer stole them. And that's how they were able to prove that that he basically murdered this guy, because he was listening to music. He didn't hear him. The cop either didn't see the headphones or didn't care. I'll just go along with saying he didn't care because he's white. So he's guilty of everything as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, so I just want to throw that out there just for safety's sake. Try to be as aware and conscious in your surroundings as possible. Doesn't mean you can't enjoy music or listen to listen to something, but just always be aware that your life can be in danger at any moment. And, you know, if I am listening to music and I'm around white people, then I'm hyper alert as far as just my eyes. I'll turn around in circles. I don't care. Whatever it takes for me to make sure I'm safe is what I do. So I just want to put that out there for other people to think about. Thank you.
Dig that. I think other folks have talked about mirrors in the workplace. If you are at a desk and you're at a computer situation or whatever your workstation looks like, particularly if you have some sort of setup where people are walking behind you, that sort of thing. I know we've had people talking about being bumped in the head by whites walking up behind them or around their desk area where you can't see. I think Roz had talked about having mirrors at his desk and that sort of thing. Just be vigilant, man. This is not a time that you want to be acting as though everything is great and that these are all your pals and folks that just love you if you're in a workplace situation, particularly if you work in an environment where there are a lot of people. When I say a lot of people, I mean like more than 30, 40 people, where it's a sizable amount of folks in your particular area where you work at. Other folks have commentary. Certainly, we do not want people sliding in at the last minute. If you have commentary that you want to share, if you have questions about anything that has been shared thus far, if you have your own workplace racism that you would like to offer, let's go ahead and get our hand up now. The number 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. Other folks have commentary they would like to share.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I just had a question for all the callers in queue. I work around a lot of white people. And with the recent election that just passed, I have one of the contractors that I work with. He has his Trump sticker on the side of his helmet, his construction hat that he wears. If he tries to engage on politics, I'm pretty decent at remaining codified when I talk to the guys. So I kind of just stay neutral. I tell them I'm pretty much I'm nonpartisan. And that kind of keeps them at bay. What do you suggest for somebody that tried to keep pushing the issue of whether I support Trump or Hillary or what have you?
1842, what do you practice telling them on the job?
Can y'all hear me? Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
I tell them that I don't talk politics at work.
That's just my codified response.
And so when they continue to pester and continue to ask and, come on, what do you think? You could tell, hey, we're all friends here. And you still say?
I don't talk politics at work.
Grand. Big fan of that one sentence where you don't have to do a whole lot of talking. All you have to do is be consistent. Just say the same thing every time, every time, every time. Other folks have a code on how you would deal with that if they continue to pester and demand some sort of response about politics.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Brilliant. 1802, same code. I don't do politics. And one thing I find that they'll try to do is if they can't get you in that moment, they'll try at another time where they think they can catch you off guard to get a response so that you break the code. So I think what you just stated in regards to consistency is completely accurate. Every single time, without fail, same answer. If you do that, you're good. But the moment you break that code to chime in on some, you know, random conversation, even if it's one sentence, they're like, well, you talked about it before. You know, so I say that consistency is the key. Let them know I don't do politics on the job. That's not what we're hired for. We're not hired to talk about Donald Trump. We're hired to do whatever the job is we're hired to do. So let's get it done, and I'm out of this conversation. Thank you.
Walking away is good, too. I know sometimes you can get cornered at your desk or they come up, you know, while you're sitting down for a snack or a meal or whatever. But if this is just like some water cooler or, you know, we're just in the hall or something and they're coming up about this, I don't talk about politics on the job. You say that one time and they continue to pester, you know, hey, Phil, I will catch you later. Got something to work on. But good seeing you, pal. Megan, good hearing from you. We'll talk later on. And you just keep it moving. That's exactly how I would deal with that. Say as little as possible, totally polite, and I think it would be challenging. I'm sure they could do it, but it would be challenging for racists to try to get you in some trouble because you just said, hey, I don't discuss politics on the job. Got work to do? Let's get back to that. I don't think it's going to be difficult for you to get in trouble for saying that in most situations.
And this is true. I'd like to say it just for anyone else. If you've ever been like uncodified, for instance, some of the people asking me are used to me talking about race. But the moment I woke up and Trump was president or president-elect, that just became my codified response. So even though they're very used to me being more vocal about things, I still have nothing to say. And it's been effective. So even if folks are like, know that you're opinionated or know that you have thoughts, I think it's still a very good code and can be very effective.
Well, I appreciate everyone advice on this issue. I will further state that when I initially, when it started winding down, dwindling down to the last stages of the campaign, I was being asked a lot of times. I have a older white female. She's always likes to talk to me. I kind of sidestep her most of the time, but she's pretty persistent. But she was asking me, so who do I think should win? And, you know, do I support Hillary and Trump? And I just kind of stayed persistent and kept telling her. I just hope, I don't know who's gonna win. I don't have any part in who wins, but whoever wins, I hope they do the best job. And I just kind of left it at that. And that seems to have worked for me for the most part. You can't argue with the most successful person, whoever wins, being the most constructive person, even though I doubt Donald Trump would be that person. I don't have any faith in the system. But thanks, everybody, for the advice.
For sure. Sure. I'm a big fan of Thomas in New York as well, where he says the deception. I could pull off deception with politics alone and just saying, I don't really follow all that. I don't vote. And, you know, this just not my cup of tea. I'm just not interested. I mean, Trump, Clinton, Gary Johnson. Leave Obama in there, man. I just can't do it. Just wake me up when it's over. So I could do that and just now back to work. And see, and I think that's one of those, I think we talked about it before, where it's like, oh, this is just some dumb, you know, some dumb nigger. He's not even paying attention to it. Right on. Trump can be president, the Klan member, he's not even paying attention. Dumb nigger. Right on. Right on. That gush yours too. And we could just go right back to work. We don't have to have any more conversations about that ever because it's just, he doesn't pay attention to everything. Might be able to use that one as well.
Yeah, I can see that working also. That's good.
If people, if you have to, I think this was last year, it might have even been the year before, but if you have to attend, if you're in one of those situations where it's like a mandatory thing for any of these holiday engagements, if you attend, maybe codify your what you're going to do, what you're not going to do, how long you're going to be there, you know, all that. And then maybe you can write a report on the event. And, you know, I would hope people don't, you know, think that this is just being goofy and all the problems that we have and everything. But, I mean, those holiday parties can be, you know, a major – I've seen where people get fired with those holiday parties. Like, it can be a big deal, things that go down there, whether you attend, whether you don't attend. I personally, where it has been a problem where I didn't attend and people got an attitude about that, and that ended up making, you know, the work situation a little more unpleasant. For a week or two. So I definitely think it's serious. I think it has an impact, and I think it's good to have a solid counter-racist code for how you deal with it. So report and ways where you can write about counter-racism. So if you attend, write up your code and then make an evaluation of how it worked out, keep you out of trouble, anything noteworthy happen at the event. Other things folks wanted to make sure they shared with us?
Can I be heard one last time? Oh, sorry about that, ma'am. Go ahead.
Oh, no, you're fine. Go ahead, sir.
You sure?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Oh, all right. I heard, I'm not sure who it was that kind of shared an anecdote about why they don't eat food or they don't eat anybody's cooking at these potlucks or what have you. Short story, a guy I know that was a contractor moved down to Mexico. he is a black male. And one of his colleagues that worked with him was a white male. Come to find out, this guy was very perverse and sick. He used to go to a bar, which obviously we don't promote drinking and everything like that. I understand that. But long story short, he used to go to a bar. He used to make cookies for the, they call them juicy girls or the girls that work in these bars. They greet the customers that come through the door. Long story short, he used to give away these cookies when he walked through and they loved the cookies. He was always wondering, why are you bringing these cookies? Why are you bringing these cookies? He used to sit back and watch him eat the cookies. This perverse guy was relieving himself in the cookies, actually masturbating in the cookie batter, making them up, passing them out, and he was sitting back watching. So this is, you have to be mindful and be careful out here because some people are really sick. Just keep that in mind. Not trying to gross anybody out, but that's just what the gentleman told me. Back on mute.
We're definitely grossed out. Right on. the female caller, first-time caller, you were going to share as well?
Oh, yes. Actually, Gus, I just wanted to know if it was possible, the gentleman who shared the website earlier, is it possible for me to make contact with him, whether he can get my email address or I get his email address, with his approval, of course?
Absolutely. That's cool.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Can I be heard, guys?
Yes, sir.
Just to piggyback off of the previous caller, I posted on BTR Community, they white people have been now getting into, they call them sperm smoothies. So when it comes to these people and their filthy, debased sexual habits, it is so true. You got to be very wary because you just never know with these creatures what they're going to try next. It's just, I mean, Dr. Wilson used to say it, you know, white people do not know what to do with their genitals. And, I mean, she couldn't have been more accurate. She is just incredible, and I miss her immensely. But, yes, please just watch when you, if you choose to take anything from a pale face, just be very careful. I would not do it. Thank you.
Double check in. Thomas in New York, did you have a commentary you were going to share, sir? Thomas in New York.
Hey, I had to travel to the ballroom here, but I just heard to the end of what Ron said.
What was interesting was, you know, this the HR rep at my job, the male who hired me, that I said I felt like he had this homoeroticness to him. But his bathroom habits are disgusting. Doesn't wash his hands. Well, either way, he left some M&Ms and peanuts and things out in a bowl. And, you know, so I walk into the pantry where this bowl is. I'm not going to get that. I'm going to make me some tea. And he was digging in his nose. So I kind of snuck up, you know, not snuck up, but he kind of, you know, caught him by surprise. He took his finger out of his nose and he smiled at me like, you know. And he proceeded to ask me, you know, a question or two. And then he put his same hand in the bowl, took a bunch of M&Ms, and walked off. So, I mean, they have very nasty habits. And I don't know if that has to do with what he was talking about, but their sexual habits and their hygiene habits are just atrocious. And do not eat anything at work. That kind of brought that to my life.
Wowie. Did we have another person, any other folks that were going to share?
I had a quick question for maybe somebody who works in the corporate field or who has to go to any Christmas or holiday parties. How do you balance being, what's a good amount of time to stay there if you don't want to be there, but you have to show some type of requirement, like show face for a few moments? How should you go about that?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I would recommend at a minimum an hour because those parties last pretty long. And just for the record, I've been invited to, how many years have I been in the business? 14. I've never gone to one, and I still have my job. So, but I would recommend an hour and specifically go talk to the person who invited you, specifically if it's a supervisor or HR rep, just be real cordial. You know, thank you for inviting me. You know, I enjoyed myself, but I really have to go. And, you know, typically it won't get tacky, but I'd say an hour, you make an appearance. Same thing I had to do this evening, you know, shake hands, kiss babies, and get out of there.
Okay.
I was going to say I agree. That's what I did last year. That's what I will do this year. Stay for a minimum of an hour. I go. I tend to go later because I find the parties are much more crowded earlier. So I like to go later when some people have left. I do like to make sure that I'm seen by specific people, so that way they can't say that I don't show up to anything. Because the vast majority, I say 99.9% of the events they have, I do not go to. So definitely, I would say that. And for some people who might want an excuse, if you have a younger sibling, you can say you're watching the child. If you have a sick relative, you can say you're taking care of a sick relative. Those, I think, are viable excuses you can use where they can't be angry at you for saying you can't go, rather than just saying, I don't go. Because I don't celebrate any of these holidays, none of them. And, you know, I practice African traditional religion, so I don't practice them anyway. But ultimately, you know, that's what I do if I have to go to a party, about a minimum of an hour, and do not drink a thing as far as liquor is concerned. Do not drink alcohol. And if you have any drunk coworkers, try to stay as far away from them as possible, because that's when their Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, you know, routine will really start to come to fruition. So I would just suggest that more than anything else. And I'll mute my line.
I think that timetable is pretty solid. I've heard that from other people. An hour, if you can get away with like 45 minutes with less, great. But, you know, an hour, no alcohol, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. And I would even say you can preempt. You can let people know, you know, I've got to take care. As Roz just said, I got to babysit. I got to pitch in and help out my brother this weekend, take care of his child, or, you know, my sister. I got to pitch in, take care of her little girl. So I can't stay a long time, but, you know, I'm going to try and pop my head in at least for, you know, about an hour or so and see what you guys are up to. So you've already preempted, like, I'm not hanging out for a long time. And I would say that repeat. And I might even add on, like, I don't even celebrate holidays. I'm just checking in to see what you all are up to. This is not even, you know, my thing at all. And then you can go and hang out for 40 minutes or whatever. You see whoever you need to see and keep it moving. That's another environment, too, that I would be very alert. And that's another reason why I'm bringing it up now, too. It can get real out of pocket. Like, they'll have, if you check the newspaper between now and the end of the year, you will see, like, the BBC, NPR, major outlets. They'll have all kinds of stories. I'm sure Forbes, they'll have something. Because white people act a fool at these events. I have been on jobs where they literally have had, like, that became part of training, like, appropriate conduct at the employee parties because people had got fired. Or there were allegations of sexual misconduct, or just all kinds of, just the barbarism continues. Anytime you have, I've said consistently, whites and alcohol is always a recipe for disaster. Workplace party is no exception. So I have heard consistently racist jokes, sexual harassment, just people being out of pocket because they're so much alcohol and what have you. The dance situation, because that happens at a lot of these events as well. So just be really alert when you're going there. Anytime that you're in a situation where it's potentially whites and alcohol, man, you really want to have your head kind of on a swivel where you can see things. Don't be surprised if you know there are people that are already kind of out of pocket in the office. And if there's going to be alcohol, like, whoa, anything could happen. Already be aware of that sort of situation, and if you need to leave a little bit earlier, do so. But I take those holiday situations seriously because I've seen where they can get really, really bad.
Yeah, I think I definitely. Sorry about that. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, I think I had to ask because unfortunately, in my job, my coworkers and pretty much just the environment, they promote maximum tackiness at all times, especially at little functions and what have you. So I definitely have to go in and set up those parameters and let them know I'm not going to be able to stay long. I got prior engagements, show my face and go ahead and get out of there. So appreciate the advice.
Can be helpful if you have the resources. If you have another black person that's codified, I don't know if you're married or whatever the case is, but if you have another black person that you can go with, particularly if it can be like, this is my wife, or, you know, this is my husband, that you're going with, great. That can help keep, if you are a black male, that can help keep some of the race soldier white women at bay, and conversely, some of the white men at bay, if you are a black female, can kind of keep them down, and someone can kind of help you, you know, stay alert and a professional soldier for the time that you're going to be there.
I agree. That's something that I employed last year. That's something I will employ this year. My wife did come with me. She did enjoy herself. Like I said, she's not a drinker. She doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, none of that. So there was nothing I had to coach her on. She knew what I was about, and we tag-teamed it and got up out of there. And I must reiterate what you just said, especially for the younger folks who may not have a lot of experience in the workforce. Absolutely, I have been at jobs where they have to reiterate conduct during the holiday season. I call it the horror day season, and it is a horror. Some of these people, man, the stuff that they do. I mean, we heard about Donald Trump ramming his fingers in women's private parts. Stuff like that goes down in these sorts of events. Like, these people get critically terroristic. It's like being trapped with it. When you're around white people, it's like if you're in a room with a lion or a tiger. You know for a fact you can get mauled, and if you get close enough, you will get mauled. Just think of it that way. Every time you're around white people in any environment. And when they're drunk, heighten that to 1,000. I'll mute my line.
Hey, Gus, one more. Gus, could I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Oh, one more thing for that gentleman. You kind of mentioned it. This is the season, specifically with all these holiday parties and the wine, that gentleman, I'm not sure if he's single or not, but I'll reiterate that. White females are on the prowl, and they will get you jacked up. I mean, literally, totally messed up. I mean, totally. And I'm just... from experiences that I've seen, they will get you messed up because they get tipsy and they start flirting. And I've seen a lot of other victims take that out of pocket and take it the wrong direction and then possibly try to talk to them on a Monday And they'll say, I never flirted with you at all. This is harassment, and you will get totally messed up. So just be aware that they're going to be have lots of wine in their system, and they are looking for someone to harass. So just be very, very aware. I saw some of it tonight, just a lot of hugs, a lot of touching on the backs and stuff like that. And you just got to be real codified, but just be very, very careful.
If it's going to be an after hours type engagement, and if there's going to be alcohol, I would factor that into the time that you arrive and when you want to leave. If it's, you know, if you know in advance this is going to be late in the evening, which is increasing the likelihood that there's going to be some inappropriate behavior, in my opinion, and then there's also going to be alcohol, factor that in to how long you're going to stay and when you want to be there, when you want to leave. And even if you haven't been to one of their parties before, that would be a time that I would go around and I would be real chatty. I would find some people that are honest, that you at least trust, could tell you that truthfully, that were at the party previously, and try to get as much information as possible, so that you know what you're getting yourself into.
Oh, yeah, Gus, you just made me think of something. It's very true. And if you haven't been to a party and you know that there's going to be alcohol, depending on the rhythm of how your job works, because I notice in some jobs, some people tend to get drunk, because white people love to get high, but they tend to get drunk later in the night. And then in other instances, I've seen people walk into the party drunk. They were already getting high long before they came, and they were about to take it to the next level once they got to the party. So I would say for those people who don't know the environment, try to go early so you can leave early. That way they don't have enough time to get drunk, to act out as badly as they would later on in the evening, depending on how the rhythm of how they practice their, you know, their partaking of alcohol, I would say. And that's another piece of advice I would say. Get in early, leave early, or like I do, I tend to go later and then just stay for about an hour. And like you said, I can push it to 45 minutes. I'll do that. And hey, hon, let's get out of here. And we just, you know, make it out of there as quickly as possible. Thank you.
I know we have a lot of folks who are big time proponents of cannabis legalization. I suspect we have a significant number of cannabis consumers. I know it's legal now in almost 10 states and the District of Columbia, petitioning to be a state. I would not consume any cannabis, any other drugs with whites. I know that sort of thing, in my experience, particularly on the West Coast, even before it was legal, certainly now that the entire West Coast is legal, that sort of thing was very popular to go. And if there was going to be some sort of workplace party, particularly in workplace work environments with a lot of younger people, when I say a lot of younger people, where you have a sizable chunk of your workforce is in their like 20s or early 30s. You have a lot of people like that, recent college grads type thing. That sort of thing was pretty prominent on the West Coast, in my experience. So, you know, I would not encourage that. It could end up being you end up consuming cannabis with someone who is a part of the process as to whether or not you get a promotion or a raise, anything. Just I would not encourage that at all. These are not your homies. These are not your friends. These are not your pals. These are race soldiers. That's the way that you should think at all times.
One more thing about the marijuana, too. I remember watching an episode of Like It Is with Gil Noble. He had a young black male who was traveling from college. He met a white male who was smoking a joint. He decided to take a couple of puffs and almost died from meningitis. These are disease vectors. They carry everything known to man. And working in the medical field, I'm coming across diseases that are legendary. And they're all had by white people. So be very careful. Like Gus was saying, do not do it. You don't know what you're going to pick up. Don't sleep on them. Don't sleep with them. Thank you.
Ashe. Ashe. Anything else folks wanted to make sure they get in as we proceed? Question.
Yeah,
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I just say, I wanted to say, you know, I've had a job for 3 years where I had to attend the Christmas party because I was a part of the planning of it. And I vowed not to go to any more after I had that job. But I do want to reiterate that no one can outdrink white people. Their alcohol consumption skills are incredible. And I've seen black people try to keep up with them, and they ended up making a fool of themselves at the Christmas party. If you can, come up with an excuse, practice deception like they do, a good excuse as to why you can't attend, maybe the day of or the day before. Oh, man, this just came up. I had to do this. Because they do talk about each other, and especially a non-white person, as they act a fool at these parties, and you don't want to, you know, be around when they go a fool. It can get really, really tacky. And after they drink a few drinks, some of the things that come out their mouth are very, very trashy. And I'll be one line. Thank you.
Doesn't get any better than tacky. I think Mr. Fuller discussed this way back, like 7 years ago on the program. He discussed the Christmas party specifically because it was about this time, Christmas parties, and how it just gets tacky, how the best it would get is tacky with the jokes and what have you from other people. So just keep that in mind as it gets close to that time of the year. Other commentary, anything else folks want to make sure they get in before we wrap things up?
I would just like to say, in regards to alcohol and white people, and not only just white people, but anybody, this has been my life experience being around drinkers and things like that, is that whatever personality trait you have, whatever character flaw you have, whatever the worst aspect of who you are is, will be magnified 1,000-fold when you're drunk. And with white people, their racism, white supremacy will be magnified, as well as their personality disorders and misbehaviors that they tend to practice. And it's also with non-white people. Whatever the worst of us is will tend to be magnified when we're drunk. So just keep that in mind with white people, especially with white people. And try your best not to be around drunk white people as much as possible. It is one of the deadliest things you can do. Thank you.
For sure. There was a report, this is in the Washington Post, a black police officer complained about racism. He says his department retaliated by firing him. This is Mr. David Mitchell. You can check this out in the Washington Post. It's on my Facebook page right now. But the point that stood out in the title of the article, it says that he complained, in my view, for workplace racism. We're talking about white supremacy in general, but particularly workplace racism. You do not want to write or employ terms that suggest that you are complaining or that you have a gripe or a grievance, that's not what it is, or that you were offended. You want to report subversive activity, incorrect conduct, breach of policy. Those are the type that's the type of language that we want to use to report infractions, violations on the job, subversion of policy and procedure. That's the type of language that we want to use, and not consistently they make an effort to put us down on a child level, that just we're so sensitive and we're just like little children and we just whine and cry if anybody says anything that just makes us feel at least a little bit bad. And I mean, that is not the presentation that we want to give for white supremacy, global white terrorism, at all. They do that sort of thing deliberately. It is not a complaint. If a black officer reported or alleged racism, and then you go from there. That could be words that we use as well, allege racism. Let's see. Anybody else need to get anything in before we wrap things up? Or folks satisfied? Anything else people need to get in?
I wanted to piggyback off of what you just said. You're absolutely correct. When you take the approach of being offended, it minimizes, in their mind, it can easily minimize whatever you're saying and dismiss it. And don't ever call a white person a racist. Use the terms, I suspect that they were practicing racism. And then you go into the incident to explain why you suspect such. That's also a good thing to do as well, if that becomes a necessity at any point. But outside of that, I think you're absolutely right. Do not ever approach a situation of racism, white supremacy. But if you're forced to discuss it or address it in a manner in which you don't come across as if you are complaining or whining, because they will utilize that to completely dismiss what you're saying. And it becomes a more of a tit-for-tat emotional thing, rather than you having laser precision in identifying the issue and then trying to address that issue. Try to be as direct as possible, and don't use metaphors. Just be direct and explicit, like Gus likes to say. Thank you, and I'll meet my line.
Mm-hmm. Yep. For sure, for sure. No talking about racism on the job. For some reason, I feel like I need to repeat that. I feel like we've said that a lot over the years on the program, and then people still come back, listeners still come back and say that they started talking about racism on the job, and it did not go well for them somehow, some way. No talking about racism on the job. I submit, even if they volunteer, even if a white person says that they want to hear your opinion, even then, I don't talk about politics on the job, and back to work. That's my recommendation. I cannot think of times where a non-white person, particularly a black person, like voluntarily decided to address racism on the job, and it ended up working out great for them. Like they got a promotion or a raise, or they got a new chair or a new big desk. I can't think of any incidents like that at all. With that, anything else folks need to get in, or are folks satisfied? Any other comments or questions, suggestions?
If white people do want to talk about racism on the job, though, don't you know, get into the conversation, but do hear their opinion and ask them questions, but try to subvert from asking it, you know, answering anything. But it could be very revealing when they start talking about it, exactly where they stand and how they feel. So never blow that opportunity.
Dig that. Listen. Listen. Ask questions. This is not time for you to get the speechifying on the job. If they bring it up, you can just listen, ask questions, get their opinion, do a little counter-racist recon of your own. That is always encouraged, recommended.
Hey, Gus, to piggyback off of what you just said, my coworker that I discussed earlier this evening, she is also the female who spoke up about the racism, white supremacy in the board game Puerto Rico that was brought to the job.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also the response and reaction, because they did try to protect that psychotic piece of turd. So that is a part of the cumulative effect of what has been done to her to bring her to the point that she reached yesterday. So I must agree with you. When you speak out about these things, if you try to address these things on the job, it usually makes your plantation life a living hell in some form or fashion. And sadly, you know, I don't know what happened to cause her to have PTSD, but whatever it is, she said she experienced more than enough triggers to take her back a year. And she said it has been a year since she had needed to go see a mental health practitioner. I just want to reiterate, black mental health is of extreme importance. Do not take it lightly. Do not take it for a joke. It is serious. Another thing I wanted to say, I've been studying about depression, and I've been learning quite a bit about exercise and the need for exercise to help alleviate depression. They say that when you get into intense exercise, it releases endorphins, and those endorphins can shift your vibration as far as if you are a depressed person, and it can also help you get out spent energy in a constructive manner rather than being self-destructive. Thank you, and I wish you all the best. I'll mute my line.
Right on. With that, we will be here tomorrow. Lothrop Stoddard, The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. This would be study session number 4. We are making good progress in the book. We are roughly the halfway point in the text. I think we should have 4, perhaps 5 more sessions before we wrap up. But again, Dr. Welsing wanted us to read the text and to apply it to our understanding of racism, white supremacy right now, 2016, and even specifically how Donald Trump became president of the United States. But that's tomorrow, Saturday, compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We will review what has gone down the last 7 days on the global plantation. Sunday, the global Sunday talk on racism. This will be the first time that we have our international audience with us since the U.S. election. I am really looking forward to hearing what has been reported where they are around the globe about the election, how whites there are talking about the election of Donald Trump. Some of these folks have already been writing in about what they've been seeing. We heard from some of these people with their predictions about what they thought was going to happen. But that'll be Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central, 12 noon Pacific this Sunday. Global Sunday talk on racism. So we'll be here every day for the next 3 days. We'll be here next Tuesday as well. Next Thursday, a week from today, in fact, we'll be here for two different programs. We will still have workplace racism, even though next Thursday is Thanksgiving. So we should have lots of participation because a lot of people, that should be one day where a lot of our victims are not at work. So you can take your day off from the plantation and we can codify how we function on the job. So that will be normal time next Thursday. But before that, we will have Paul Ifeoma Grant, black male from the UK. He's been on the program numerous times before. We've discussed some of his writing. He has a whole book about black businesses and black people working together in different financial endeavors. We talked about that when he was on the program in 2012. We talked about the London riots in 2011. He's been on the program repeatedly. I wanted to have him on because he wrote an article earlier this year. Basically, he was saying that black people deserve, that was the specific word, black people, some black people here in the U.S. deserve having Donald Trump as president. And I wanted to address that as well as some of his other reports. The same thing, international ramifications of Trump being in the White House, comparisons to Brexit, the same type of mood shifting to a more overt form of white supremacy. Is that something he's seeing globally? He'll be here with us next week. And it'll be at 1, or let me make sure I get my times correct here, 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central, 1 p.m. Pacific. So that's the early broadcast. And then we'll be right back. I think we'll have maybe an hour or so window. We'll be right back for the evening program at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. But we'll have two programs next Thursday. Mr. Grant will be with us early in the day, live from the UK, and then we'll do workplace racism. So you can tune in, have your turkey and cranberry sauce and all the jazz, watch the football game, put the sound on mute, and you can tune in, counter racist programming all day long. With that, thanks, everyone, for tuning in. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy, I would say, particularly this time of year with everything that's going on and the nutty holidays. And it's been my experience they tend to have increased sobriety checkpoints and what have you around these nutty horror days. So you should keep that in mind as well if you are going to be out and about in a vehicle. You do not want to be under the influence of anything. If you are going to be the driver, passenger, even a pedestrian, you never know when today will be the day when we have to bump into Darren Wilson, Daniel Holtzclaw, any other race soldier, badge or no. Whites are dangerous, and white people kill for fun. We should keep that in mind and make sure that our behavior at all times, at all times, at all times, reflects that war is being waged against black people in all areas of people activity, alcohol, cannabis, cigarettes, any other narcotics that whites concoct. The evidence at this point has not shown that they are going to help us solve this problem. With that, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, your brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.